Alter Bridge has the number one song right here on the Sideshow Countdown for the third straight week in a row. That's Isolation. And you don't have to be a diehard Alter Bridge fan, obviously, to love that one. We're going to be back next week with more of the biggest songs in rock, plus songs that are handpicked by me for you. I am Nikki Six.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
And we will see you
next weekend, Nikki.
Yes, I was going to say something bad, but I'm going to keep it to myself.
Good. Be a good boy.
See you next week.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done. It's Meltdown, and I want to hook you up with my personal Red Wings season tickets. Keep it locked right here on the Rip weekdays from 3 to 7 to score tickets to an upcoming Red Wings game and be registered to win that sweet party at the Joe hosted by me at the end of the season. Exclusively from your Detroit Red Wings at 101 WRIF.
The Rip. 101 WRIF. WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
Thank you very much, and welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining me here on WRIF's phone-in talk show. Appreciate you tuning by, I guess it is. And, wow, what a game. I gotta tell you, football's not my favorite sport, but this was quite exciting. Packers taking it, 31-25, Aaron Rodgers doing it up for the Packers. And here's the reason why I really don't get into Super Bowl Sunday, because Sunday's a work day for me, and I've had some extra duties on this magazine I work for, so I didn't go to a single Super Bowl party or anything like that, and I never get to. Used to do a music shift on Sunday afternoon as well, so a billion people out there. Isn't that what the audience is? Oh, you're wondering why I didn't introduce Jalene. Where's Jalene? Jalene is off tonight. And next week I'll be off. We're taking little vacations, and that odd noise was not a rude noise on my part, but simply me unzipping my WRIF hoodie. Yeah. So, in any event, she's not here, although she may be listening right now. Jalene, why don't you call in? As a matter of fact, it was touch and go as to whether I was actually going to be here tonight. That cold hit me. Not as badly as, you know, knock on plastic here, but it's not as bad as it hit a lot of people. But I was thinking, well, at least Jalene will be taking up half the slack, you know. We got to take our phones off of hold, don't we? That's right. No, that's not what you do. See, this is why I need her here. Okay, there we go. But I'm not here all by myself. Aaron is taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF. That is 313-298-9743. You're going to get a lot of that tonight, unfortunately. My apologies in advance. If you'd like to email me, it's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. We also have a Facebook where we always want new friends. So just go to Facebook, type in Night Call, and you got it. So join me. 313-298-WRIF is our number, and you'll talk initially to Aaron, who will then put you on the air. And, you know, if you don't like something I say, tell me. Aaron might not even agree with it. He might agree with you, but he's not going to tell you one way or the other. He is called what is known in the biz as the phone screener. As the phone screener. So take it out on me, not on Aaron. And if you start ringing, he's sometimes talking to other people. Have patience and just keep on ringing. Well, I was thinking about watching the game, and I didn't see the whole thing. Saw parts of it, but like I said, very exciting. I was, you weren't watching the Super Bowl, Pete? What is up with that? Well, I was preparing for this show, and it takes a lot of preparation, like going through news sites to, printing stuff out. But I noticed an article a little while ago. It's called TV Viewing Continues to Edge Up. In other words, we've got our brains and our, they're connected. You know, I might wind up playing a lot of music for you tonight. Hold on. All right, we're here. Aaron says he'll come in and do it for me if I need him to. But historians may someday note with wonder that by the end of 2010, at least six cable television shows were about auctioneers and pawnbrokers, and all were considered successes by the respective channels. Countless shows were about cops and robbers, and countless hours were devoted to competitive singing, dancing, and even figure skating, and they each found an audience, proving again that television remains a refuge in the media revolution. In other words, people aren't just looking at their iPhones or Twittering or all the rest of the stuff. But I know that I spent almost the entire day, because I was editing articles for this magazine called The Fifth Estate. You can go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, PeterWerbe.com, and you can see what that mag is all about. But in any event, so I spent the entire day editing stuff in Word, in Microsoft Word, and then when I would take a break, I would go look at my television. Now, I was sort of known for not watching television. That was when it first came in, you know, like 50, 60 years ago. It was known as the boob tube. And people that watched it a lot, pardon me, were called vidiots, right? But now it is the center of culture. I mean, sure, we go to shows, we go to theater, we go to stuff like that. But, you know, all in all, it's television, right? Americans watch more television than ever in 2010, according to the Nielsen Company. Total viewing of broadcast networks and basic cable channels rose about 1% for the year to an average of 34 hours per person per week. Now, that's that's five. God, are you going to keep listening to this? Please do it. I'll tell you what. Call 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743, and you can take the pressure off me. Yeah, I could have Jalene here. I could be coughing. She could be talking. Now it's just me. So if you don't want to hear me clearing my throat every 30 seconds, do it to me. I took a Sudafed before it came, too. So that means people are averaging 5 hours a day, and I don't do anything like that. So it's, I don't know. Do I watch 2 hours a day? I don't think so. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I watch like a two-hour show or a movie or something. I guess that counts. So I'm watching 2 hours. That means somebody to average it out, I can't do the math on that. But it's a lot. Like, they got to watch 8 hours. That's right. So are you watching more television? And because it's more alluring now. The reason, we've talked about this before, the reason that I started watching television is twofold. Is the availability of shows through cable, which I never had up till maybe a year and a half ago, and also the equipment. So I got this big flat screen. Wow. God, it's not even big. It's probably people thinking that's all you got. 32-inch. That's what people put in their bedrooms now. But I got a small room and sitting close, and so it looks fine. So, and what do you think? I mean, are you really enjoying television, or is it just sort of filling in so-called dead time? I try to still spend a lot of time reading, okay? You know, try to, you know, that old-fashioned thing. And but a lot of my time as well is spent in front of another screen, and that is, yeah, of course, the Internet. Although kids today think that the Internet is like 20th century, all right? So I did want to bring up a couple of things, and then you can join me. I'll see how my voice holds out. The revolution in Egypt is still going on. All sorts of concessions are being made to the protesters who say they want Mubarak and the entire Mubarak establishment out of there. It's corrupt, human rights violating, you know, kleptocracy, right? That it's institutionalized theft, where the army owns a third of the economy and runs it, and they own everything under the sun. And essentially, the army is gaining power here. And the man that they're talking about putting in there, this Vice President Suleiman, Omar Suleiman, the newly named Vice President, this guy ought to be in at The Hague in the International Court for the crimes against humanity that he's committed. In fact, well, here, though, this is what's so strange. Egypt officials seek to nudge Mubarak out. Why don't they just throw his ass out? Wouldn't that be a good idea? President Hosni Mubarak appeared increasingly isolated on Friday as hundreds of thousands of protesters returned to Tahrir Square, and the Obama administration and some members of the Egyptian military and civilian elite pursued plans to nudge him from power. This is pretty strange, isn't it, that the United States is involved in this? We take it for granted. This is imperial activity. This is the activity of the empire that continually involves us in wars and that drains our treasury. we think it is in, we always say it's in our interest. Actually, it's in corporate interest. You and I don't have any interest in what happens there. He said, well, what about oil? You know, we would have found a way to go around this a long time ago. We get most of our oil from, from Canada in any event. And some, always doesn't look as good as it did, but, from Venezuela. So we don't need all this Middle Eastern oil. And it may operate at actually a loss for us because we say, oh, man, we're paying $3.20 a gallon. I mean, if you really figured in everything that we've paid those nations, the hundreds of billions of dollars in military aid, the soldiers that we've lost over there, the lives that our soldiers have taken over there, the what they've experienced, what they've been involved in, and what the countries that have been invaded and occupied have suffered, what the regimes that the United States has kept propped up with arms and with money. It's really not worth it. Well, here, this is easy. Here's Jalene. Jalene is here. Hi, Jalene.
Peter, you need me.
I need you. Are you coming in?
I just got off my plane, and I was listening to you in my iPod.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. And you need to take a cough drop now.
Okay, you talk. I'll suck on a cough drop.
I know you need me, and I miss you, but you're sounding great, and... Boy, I wish I were there.
Well, it's easy. You have a car?
Of course I have a car.
Well, drive right over here. Get your pretty little self right in here.
Listen, Werby, I'm on the loan next week. Tonight's your night. I'm going to listen, and tonight I'm just going to listen.
Okay. But you know what I'm going to do? If this doesn't work at midnight, I'm going to play my recorded interviews. You know what I could do? If it's really bad, I'll do that. I'll play the recorded interviews at midnight, and then I'll come back on. I'll rest my voice for an hour and come back on live at 1 a.m.
Yeah, like that's going to happen.
All right, let me get on with my rave. If you're not coming in...
You're sounding great.
You're out of here.
You were struggling. I turned it on, and I missed everyone. But next week, remember, the freak show happens.
Jalene by herself. I'll be off on vacay. All right, Jalene, love you.
Love you, too. Love everyone.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye now. Jalene Jordan, my partner in thought crime. She's off on vacation, but called in. I think she should come in, don't you? Anyway, we're talking about Egypt. The country's newly named Vice President Omar Suleiman and other top military leaders were discussing steps to limit Mr. Mubarak's decision-making authority and possibly remove him from the presidential palace in Cairo, though not to strip him of his presidency immediately, according to American and Egyptian officials. How would you like it if Egyptian officials were talking about our government and getting rid of, like, Bush or Obama or something like that? Well, some of us, depending on what side of things we are, would probably like that. A transitional government headed by Mr. Suleiman would then negotiate with opposition groups to amend Egypt's constitution and begin a process of democratic changes. Of course, Mr. Suleiman, as they call him, was responsible for the undemocratic state of affairs along with Mubarak and what have you. A hideous torture state where the United States sent some of its prisoners in violation of international law to be tortured. Administration officials said that among the ideas that had been discussed were suggesting to Mr. Mubarak, hey, Hosni, I got a little suggestion for you. Why don't you move to your home in Sharm el-Sheikh, the seaside resort, or maybe you could embark on an annual medical leave to Germany for an extended checkup, like maybe till you die. Such steps would provide him with a graceful exit and effectively remove him as the central political player, going partway towards addressing a central demand of protesters on the streets of Cairo. Why is this guy getting any slack whatsoever? Contrary to what Vice President Biden said, the guy is a hideous dictator, you know, and presided over horrible crimes. He belongs in the international court. So why isn't he being prosecuted for his crimes, like Milosevic, the president of Yugoslavia? Oh, yeah, they'd have to also charge his accomplices. Now, who would that be? Oh, that would be Barack Obama. That would be George Bush. That would be Bill Clinton. That would be Bush's Pappy. That would be Ronald Reagan. Wouldn't it? We'll talk about Ronnie, one of the worst presidents in the history of the United States. But that's another thing. So he was aided and abetted. He was our, quote, asset there. Now, of course, it's a little different. He's a liability, so they're talking about moving him out and getting some other assets in there without getting their asses out completely and something, well, that doesn't do the bidding directly of the United States corporations and U.S. military. That would be bad, right? Let me see. Oh, yeah, here. You know, this is, they're worried about the contagion of this, that maybe all of these, so many of these authoritarian allies of the United States, things like that will happen there as well. And protests over crippling prices and corrupt leadership are sweeping much of the Islamic world, but the government in Pakistan blithely dismissed any threat to its longevity or to the country's stability. The prime minister of Pakistan said they're not Egypt or Tunisia. He said our institutions are working and democracy is functional. If you know anything about Pakistan, you know that that is not true. But his name is Yusuf Raza Gilani. And he said, while Mr. Gilani appeared unruffled, diplomats, analysts, and other Pakistani officials admitted to unease and conceded that Pakistan contained many of the same ingredients for revolt found in the Middle East, and then some, an economy hollowed out by bad management and official corruption, rising Islamic religious fervor, get this one, folks, and a poisonous resentment of the United States, Pakistan's biggest financial supporter. You got that? There's a poisonous resentment of the United States there, and at the same time, your and my tax dollars are the biggest financial supporter of this country. How many of you want to give any money to Pakistan anymore? Is there anybody that wants out there that wants to give a dime in military aid to any of these beastly authoritarian dictatorships that we support all across the world? You know, there's others, too, Tajikistan, Kazakhstan, places like that. Let me see. It says page 2. There's a little question that images from Egypt and Tunisia are reverberating through Pakistani society. Ali Ahmad, a hotel worker in Lahore, said, there's no electricity, no gas, no clean water. I think if things stay the same, people will come out and destroy everything. When a young banker in a prestigious job at a foreign bank was asked if Pakistan could go the way of Egypt, he replied, I hope so. Well, and then there's big articles. Imagine this. There's big articles all the time in the New York Times. This is by Victoria Burnett. Often it's, what's this guy's name, Romero, that reports on Latin America about always the disastrous state of the Cuban economy. Cuba, they're always reporting to us, as they say here, a crippled economy. They don't say that about Pakistan. I mean, people are getting fed there. As you know, I've been to Cuba a number of times. And I don't like any authoritarian government, whether it's here or whether it's there. So I'm no fan of Los Hermanos Castro at all. But there's always, you know, Cuba's called this failed state. You know what? Even though it goes off every once in a while, they have electricity there. It's and they're always there is and. There's enough gas and enough clean water. In fact, because Cuba is a very poor country, they try to split things up fairly equally. Like they don't, it's not as equal as it used to be, and it's probably going to go a bad way. You know, it'll wind up, I've said before, and I've written about this, it'll probably wind up to be like Jamaica. that's in the future. Right now, it's probably the best place in the world and the most peaceful. Of Cuba is, of any country, poor country in the world. But look out, because right now what we're looking at is food prices worldwide hitting record high levels. People in some places have to spend as much as 50% of their income on food. The United States, we spend 6%, and a lot of these countries, including Egypt, have had food riots and demonstrations over the cost of things. So, by the way, so we started off with Egypt. So I'm upstairs here in the building at WRIF working the elliptical, you know, that machine kind of works your, kind of like cross-country skiing, works your arms and your legs, trying to stay fit for you. You know. Actually, that's not true. I'm trying to stay fit for myself. But be that what it may. Hey, if you want to call in the meantime, It's 313-298-WRIF, and just in a minute, we're going to get to my old pal Adam Brook on. He's filed a lawsuit in Oakland County Circuit Court against Royal Oak, who he says is that the zoning restrictions on medical marijuana that went into effect on Thursday violates the Michigan Constitution and the state law governing medical marijuana. So that in a minute. Anyway, so I go into the exercise room here at WRIF, and up there on the television is Fox News. Now, I got to tell you, I never have watched that. I usually, when I see it, I've seen clips, like on liberal websites, like BuzzFlash.com, something like that. Usually there. It's a good place to see it. And I think, boy, that's really weird. And so I thought, oh, I got to change this, like to CNN. And the remote's gone. There's no remote. So I said, okay, I'm going to watch it. So it started off, I should have written this down, and I know this guy's a somewhat known newscaster. It was Eric somebody or other, and then Shepard Smith. And the Eric guy on Fox News, they're talking about Egypt, and you could probably guess for about 3 hours as to what they were talking about, what they made of the Egyptian situation. And you know the saying that the man with a hammer sees only nails. So they weren't talking about freedom. They weren't talking about these corrupt regimes. They weren't talking about the impact on U.S. foreign policy. None of that. None of that at all. That what they were talking about was that the Egyptian revolution means we should be drilling for oil in Alaska. Yeah. This ex-Shell president of Shell Oil was on there saying that. And then they had this other guy that was talking about drilling for gas domestically and how wonderful it is. You know, T. Boone Pickens thing. Well, the way they get that is this by fracking, by pumping diesel fuel into the ground, and they're spoiling. In fact, we're going to talk about that in the EPA. You know, the Republicans want to get rid of the Environmental Protection Agency. What commie put that law, or the Clean Water Act and the Environmental Protection Act, or that set up the EPA? What? Oh, yeah, it was Nixon. That's right. But any event, here are these guys that are saying that we ought to destroy the environment. And, of course, there's no way in the world. Everybody knows that by now, I guess. I'm probably not Fox News viewers who only watch that, because you got to have some context. If you only watch that, that becomes reality. And that's really a bad way to go. Any event, the drilling in Alaska would only bring profits to the corporations that these conservatives are fronting for. I mean, they're corporate whores, essentially. They're doing the bidding of these wealthy guys who can pay for their services. And even if they could do it, it would be about like 10 years before they could get it up and running. So it has nothing to do with our situation here. All right, your thoughts, 313-298-WRIF. Scott and Nick, hang on. I'll get to you in a minute, but I want to bring to the microphones right now something that is affecting us, and it is a medical marijuana patient who has sued Royal Oak. His name is Adam Brook. If you've listened to the show for a long time, you know we've had Adam on when he is one of the organizers of the Hash Bash every first Saturday in April, going way back. Adam Brook, welcome to Night Call.
Thank you, Peter.
Yeah.
Nice to be back.
Yeah. Yeah. So you sued. You have cancer?
I had thyroid cancer.
Wow.
In March, and I'm being treated for that. But I'm a chronic pain patient from way back. I've had a number of back surgeries, and my qualifying disease was really my chronic pain. But
so you're really, you're an authentic medical marijuana patient.
Oh, yeah. The term we like to use is qualified under the state law.
Qualified, all right.
Qualified.
So what's up with Royal Oak said we don't want these places to dispense it in our city?
Well, basically Royal Oak, the city commission back last year started, they had a moratorium in town, and they started talking about different ordinances they could pass. And I went to city council at their first reading. And I told them if they were to pass any laws that went against state law and contradicted state law, that I'd sue them. And then just last week, 2 weeks ago, really, almost, They had a second reading, and again, they were also confused at the table as to what they were actually voting about.
Well, wait, you got me a little confused, too. What was the ordinance?
The ordinance was a ordinance that prevented, it's a land use ordinance, so it prevented any retail establishments, it prevented any growing establishments, but then they went one step further at the table. They decided that it would also not allow any patient or caregiver to grow in their own house. There would be no growing anywhere in the city.
Now, wait a minute, Adam Brooke. When it came up, when they tried to ban open carry of handguns at the Eats, Beats, and Arts Festival, they said, look, this violates state law. You have to let these guys, and they backed off right away. How come they're not backing off when you tell them?
Well, they feel that they are enforcing federal law, and they're hanging their hat on federal law.
Uh-huh.
And the problem is they're in violation of the law that we passed. They know this. The city attorney told the commissioners that they would be sued if they went forward doing what they were doing, and they did it anyway. And it just kills me as a Royal Oak resident to have to bring a lawsuit against the city in which I live, as broke as they are.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, they could have passed the moratorium for another 120 days, saying that there could be no retail establishments and that, and just leave the patient alone. But they went one step further this time, and they directly affected the patient. And under state law, the word use includes growing. And this is all about definitions. And my lawyer, Joey Misker, he will explain how the definitions deny these people the opportunity to do what they're doing. The state law directly contradicts what they did, and they know that.
But wait a minute. The United States Attorney General Holder has said that federal law always supersedes state law, and is the city of Royal Oak, which is banning caregiver centers and people growing it in their house, even though it's okay over Michigan law, they have a case.
Well, the federal government is supposedly not going after state patients who are following state law.
Yeah.
They've made that comment a number of times. At this point, the problem is, as a patient, I know that state law allows me to do something, and the local ordinance shouldn't ban me from doing something that state law allows. And for the reasons that they're giving, that's the worst part. This is classic fear-mongering, reefer madness type stuff. It's all about the children and the fact that somebody may set up a grow-op next to a school.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, in my opinion, as a former grocery store owner, I would tell you, if someone set up a grow-op next to a school, the best thing that could happen is maybe the children could be brought in to be shown how to do indoor gardening.
Well.
This is the reefer madness of a new millennium, and it's.
Well, Adam Brooke, give me a sum up here. What should we be looking for, and what's going to occur? In what's the next step here?
Well, we have a hearing scheduled for the 16th, in Oakland County Court, and at that point, we're going to be looking for a declaratory judgment where. The court will rule if the city can do what they claim they can do. And to be honest, I'm fairly confident in this, which is why I brought the lawsuit. This judge is going to be following Michigan state law. And Michigan state law, as of 2008, guarantees me the right to grow medicinal marijuana in my home.
Well, so, is there a hash bash set for the first Saturday in April?
First Saturday in April at high noon on the Diag of the University of Michigan. I have confirmation from Governor Gary Johnson. He'll be speaking. He'll be in town, and we got lucky on that one. So we're planning for a big year this year.
All right, Adam Brooke. And do this. Please email me and let me know when developments occur. We'll get you back on the air.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Keep you updated.
Adam Brock, thank you for taking this on and for following the law. It used to be that if you smoked marijuana, you were breaking the law. Well, things have changed. Here is, I don't have a name here, but it's they're from Eastern Michigan University. Want to talk about media usage. I was talking about how now it's an average of 35 hours a week. It means 5 hours a day. If I watch two, somebody's watching 10. Yikes. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Nick. My first call got dropped. That's why the name kind of disappeared, I suppose.
Okay, Nick, go ahead.
I called in because when I heard you talking about the media usage, I knew that this would be a great area for me to call in. I actually did my undergrad and graduated in August with a degree in electronic media and film, and majority of my time was spent researching media usage and addiction. Actually, most of the media usage today is completely unintentional. I don't, no matter where you go, you're always surrounded by media influences, whether you're in your car and you're passing around billboards, or you're in your dorm room and you've just got the television on for some white noise. A lot of, I'd say probably about 30 to 40% of all students with a TV in their dorm room just leave it on while they're doing homework so they can have that white noise in the background. And I'd say media usage actually explodes exponentially once you hit the university level, because then, you know, you're on your computer in class and, you know, you may be using that to take notes, but.
I don't know how they do it, because I know that if I'm like even trying to read news sites on a computer, read the newspaper in the other room, my wife's watching television, I find it so distracting. But I'm old school. Maybe the modern mind, although people have been disputing that the mind isn't any different. We've kind of culturally become accustomed to so-called multitasking, but the brain doesn't do well at it.
You know, I would completely agree with that. There, in fact, have been studies done that actually have linked media and media usage now to the rising rates of ADD and ADHD in children and adults. The media is not only giving us the ability to do multiple things at once without dividing our attention, but it's also creating, I guess, a shortness of attention where we can't focus on one thing for too long because we've got so many things going on.
Well, one of the things that always struck me, I think I mentioned this last week when I would say to people, have they ever seen a movie? And they would say, oh, yeah, I've seen part of it. I heard it so many times I couldn't figure it out. And then I realized what's happening. People are channel surfing, and they go, oh, yeah, look, man, they just crash into, this or that and blah, blah, blah. And then it started to slow down, and then they change the channel. So people, they don't even stick with anything for a long amount of time because there's so many choices. There's too many. One of the things when I used to sell shoes when I was in my late teens, they told me, never bring out more than two pair, because once you have, if you've got like six pair of shoes out there, you just totally confuse the customer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Another thing that seems to be a problem lately with media and the everyday person is that very, very, very few people who are actually using media are media literate. They're not able to sort through all the noise that the media is producing. Like advertisements, they're not sifting through and getting the actual message. They're just looking for all the bells and whistles. They're just letting the media wash over them. Most people can't really discern the meaning out of whatever is coming. And I'm not saying that to be rude or saying that everyone else is at a lower level of intelligence. It's just that no one has really been trained to pick apart the media and use it to their advantage.
Well, I'll tell you, there's an old book by a guy named Jerry Mander called Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television. It was written maybe 25 years ago. Are you familiar with it?
I am not.
Well, no. I looked at it the other day and I thought, man, this has got to be really old-fashioned and not really taken into consideration the advances in electronic media over the last quarter of a century. But I looked at it and I thought it was spot on. Hey, I'm way late to do a little bit of business here. So thank you for joining us. There's open lines at 313 298 WRIF. Hang on if you're on hold, and we will we'll get you on the air.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Now, this is Joe Cordell. I'm here to talk to you about an unpleasant but an important subject, and that's the subject of divorce. If you're in a good marriage, or even a marriage that's not so good but that can be saved, then you can tune out for the next 60 seconds. Now I want to speak to the guys that are still listening. Odds are you're like a lot of guys. You've worked hard to get ahead. You have a nice home, some savings, a solid retirement plan, and children that you love more than life itself. Yet despite your thoughtful game plan, you're now facing a divorce that you can't avoid. That's where we come in. Cordell and Cordell makes it its business to focus on representing men in your situation.
The attorneys at Cordell & Cordell work to help men maximize their role in their children's lives, which includes protecting men's financial means to do so. Call the domestic litigation firm of Cordell & Cordell, a partner men can count on. Offices in Troy and Detroit, 313-465-1999, 313-465-1999, 313-465-1999, or visit online at CordellCordell.com. That's CordellCordell.com.
Want to take a look behind the microphone here at the WRIF studios? Go to WRIF.com and register to win a spot on the VIP list. You'll get information on breaking into the broadcast industry, a tour of WRIF, and can register to win a scholarship to Specs Howard School of Media Arts.
Hey, Sobe Life Water fans, I'm Jessica Zohr, best known for my role on TV as Vanessa from Brooklyn. Okay, let me paint you a picture. I'm in the jungles of Costa Rica, and Sobe Life Water is using my body as a canvas for their latest skin suit campaign. Right now, they're painting a lizard suit on me, one scale at a time. You see, the lizard suit mimics the bottle label of the new Sobe Life Water Macintosh Apple Cherry, which, by the way, is delicious and all-natural with vitamins and electrolytes. You can see the skin suit process and get exclusive behind-the-scene content by visiting facebook.com/Sobe. Sobe Life Water, introducing Macintosh Apple Cherry and Strawberry Kiwi Lemonade. Two new flavors with vitamins and electrolytes that you've got to try.
Now pick up the two newest zero-calorie Sobe Life Waters, Strawberry Kiwi Lemonade that'll kickstart your taste buds, and Macintosh Apple Cherry that has great flavor. It'll slap your taste buds awake. Both great flavors available at your favorite stores.
Our son would go from "Good morning, Mom," to words you'd never expect to come out of your child's mouth. Our pain came from not knowing what to do. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. 5 or 6 years later, he was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. I think the hardest part of living with someone who has a mental illness is thinking that you're alone, that no one else could understand. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is made up of people who live it every day. We lean on each other and we learn from each other. NAMI doesn't let anyone give up hope. My name is Mary Tadikin, and I can tell you what NAMI has meant for my family. It has meant that we are a family.
1 in 5 adults lives with depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, or other mental illnesses. NAMI provides education and support to these families and individuals. To find a local chapter, go to NAMI.org or call 800-950-NAMI.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julene.
All right, thank you very much. Julene is on assignment. You know, they always say that. No, she's on vacation. She is going to be doing the show all by herself next week. I'll be going on vacation. And what is up with this Ronald Reagan thing? He turned 100 today, and everyone is lavishing praise on this man that was probably one of the worst presidents in American history. If you go to my website, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E.com, and look over on the right side, it says, a celebration for one of the worst presidents in U.S. history. It says how Reagan destroyed America and the middle class. Click here for more information on Reagan's disastrous presidency. And then there's even a half-hour film and a real news special. It's called Reagan Celebration Hides Brutal History. And so they got this big thing going. And, you know, there's something really creepy where politicians are projected as these extraordinarily special people. You can kind of do it if they're a long time ago. You can do it with Washington or Lincoln or FDR, but Reagan is too close, and he's being used to impose these policies, these social policies that are disastrous for the American people, great for corporations. Remember, the main thing that Reagan was a spokesman for General Electric. He also, by the way, he was the president of the Screen Actors Guild, which was always left wing, and he was a Democrat way back, and he was also a secret informer for the FBI. He became governor of California and called out the National Guard at one point that wound up shooting to death a student. And then remember his first act was that when he got into office was to break the union of these people that had stupidly supported him. And then deregulating the economy, which has led exactly to the situation where we are. He let the banksters loose. And in fact, I got this email from someone in Farmington Hills, and it says, happy birthday, happy 100th birthday, Ronald Reagan, and thank you for doubling the federal debt and never submitting a balanced budget. Did you know that? For growing the government during your administration, he, like everyone else, including George Bush as well, increased the size of government. I mean, this is just such nonsense that that these right-wingers put forth about how they want to go back to when there was a good Republican president. Every one of them expanded, and every Democrat, too, expanded the government. For raising taxes a number of times, for negotiating with terrorists by sending 1,200 Stinger missiles to Iran for release of hostages in Lebanon. And then there was also, doesn't even mention the Iran-Contra thing, where in violation of statutes, the federal statutes, the United States was secretly sending weapons to the Ayatollah, right? For standing strong against terrorists, then fleeing from Lebanon with tail between legs after the Marine barracks bombing. We lost 230 Marines at one time, and Reagan just pulled right out. And he asks the email writer here, would our friends on the right nominate someone else with that same record today? I will give him one credit. He was a much better actor than he thought. So they got speeches and academic panels. There's a Rose Parade float, a six-foot-high cake, commemorative stamps and jelly beans, a Beach Boys concert, a tribute from the Jonas Brothers, and a video homage to the Super Bowl, which is also was today. I missed that, thankfully. The memorials included a 21-gun salute and a graveside wreath laying by Nancy Reagan. There's been hundreds of former aides and supporters. What is up with this? This guy was a disaster. If you go to my site, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, Peter Werbe. .com, there is, over on the right side, there is a picture of Reagan. And if you go, and I thought I had it up. Oh, yeah, here it is. It's called The Reagan Ruins. And it, for one thing, busts all the myths. There you go. Busts all the myths. That's not easy to say. And there's a number of essays. Revisiting the Reagan Nightmare, Ronald Reagan, Enemy of the American Worker, Reagan's Tear Down This Wall Myth. Remember, it was like he said to Gorbachev, tear down this wall. And then it got torn down. Well, it was about 2 years later. Another article called Reagan's Mean Spirit Legacy of Economic Disaster. Another Reagan Ruins. Third World America, Reagan Revolution Drags Us Down. And on and on and on. Reagan Revolution, Home to Roost, it shows, and what's occurred. So, but if this was some, like if they tried to do this for the 100th anniversary of Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, say, what is this? I mean, is this like the king or something? The president really should be like the dog catcher. Important, right? Dog catcher is important. But we don't want to elevate him in, or her now in some manner that they take on this aristocracy, this aristocratic mantle. This is what the American Revolution was all about. No aristocracy, and yet here, this is like the coronation of the king, although, king's gone. So, In this the weekend's festivity, the Reagan Library in Simi Valley, California, going to cost $5 million. Couldn't they do something a little better with that? Boom, boom, shot you down. That's the name of John Lee Hooker tune, right? Just, I wasn't even trying to collect these, but here, just real quickly. A shooting at a fraternity house in Youngstown, Ohio, killed one student and injured 11, including six students. Lieutenant Governor Rick Sheehy said Wednesday that his 21-year-old son was injured when he accidentally shot himself in the face. In California, an elementary school principal was shot to death Wednesday by a school janitor in Placerville. No children were hurt, and he was killed in his office. I guess they got him. In Florida, one corrections officer was killed and another wounded Wednesday in a gun battle with a man suspected of killing his parents. He'd shot his parents to death, and then canine units tracked him down through a remote wooded area, and Colonel Greg Malloy died when he and other officers exchanged fire. Another officer was in stable condition. In Detroit, barricaded gunmen surrendered. No humans were injured, but Detroit police said they shot and killed one of three pit bulls in a home. And maybe most frightening, because as I always say when we talk about, I mean, something is dreadfully wrong with gun ownership in this country. I mean, this is a level at which we're should be looking at it in the, what was it, the Disease Control Center or whatever, you know, that. But here, by law, Roy Perez should not have had a gun 3 years ago when he shot his mother 16 times in their home in Baldwin Park, California, killing her, then went next door and killed a woman and her 4-year-old daughter. He pleaded guilty to 3 counts of murder, was sentenced to life imprisonment, and had a history of mental health issues. As a result, even though in 2004 he legally bought the 9mm Glock 26. The Glock? I wonder what those people at Glock, I thought they were out here in Warren, weren't they? That their little pea shooter there, that can do such damage, including in Tucson, is used in such a murderous manner. They think, well, you know, people kill people, not guns, right? That even though he had, at the time of the shootings, his name was in a statewide law enforcement database as someone whose gun should be taken away. But apparently they just have a real bad opportunity to do this. Where did I see the? There was some number here in the thousands of people adjudicated as mentally defective have committed domestic violence misdemeanors, have felony convictions, and what have you. They should be barred from buying guns, but they don't seem to be able to do that. But there's thousands and thousands of people that have it. Well, that's cheery. Huh? Let's go back to our phones. Peter Werby with you on WRIF's Night Call, 313-298-WRIF. Here is Mike. Mike is in Detroit. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
I'm doing good. What's
hey,
up?
I was just wondering, you know, since, you know, the country's in such turmoil right now, and I think that it's mainly because the people don't understand their proper place, in a republic, you know, because this is a republic. It's not a democracy. And the people, they don't know the role that they're functioning in. These people out here right now, the United States citizens, they're functioning in a corporate capacity, and they're not functioning as men and women with rights. They're functioning as persons that have privileges and benefits. And
Mike, don't you think that's ancient history now? Don't you think we are just peasants and the corporations are the feudal lords?
No. The people, the sovereign men and women of this good republic, we are the rulers of everything, and all these public servants out here, that's exactly what they are, is servants.
Well, Mike, come on. I mean, this is the model. This is what we should have. This is what we learned in civics class. This is what it says in the Constitution. But with the ability of corporations to control almost every aspect of daily life, unfortunately, and because we, the people, do absolutely nothing, I would love to say, yes, you're exactly right. We're servants and peasants.
No, the United States people are servants and peasants, because if you look at it, the republic was here before the United States Corporation was. And when we created the United States Corporation, we did that to control commerce and other functions such as that. And the 14th Amendment, you take that. That's been deemed unconstitutional ever since the 1800s. Now, you know, if you choose to be a United States citizen, which is a servant of the other republics, because the District of Columbia is only, you know, just a little square. It's not very big. It's a corporation. Yeah. So the people have, through contracts that we've gone into, through the ignorance of the people, we have gone into contracts because we want some benefits and privileges instead of standing up on our rights. We've given away our rights. And now you're not functioning as a man or a woman. You're functioning as a male or a female, which that's chattel property. And, you know, you've waived your rights so many times over that there's no way that the American people can even come close to standing on any of their rights.
Well, I think it's time that we did. I think that if we, you know, when I say that we're peasants and servants, I do that to hope that people will say, like you're saying, no, we're not. We are sovereign people. We are the rulers. The corporations, I mean, business companies should be here to serve the public, not to serve themselves. And, of course, they've turned out to be the rulers and made a sham of the democracy that feeds the republic in terms of selecting people for office. All right, Mike, thank you very much, and good to keep that in mind. Here's something. There's a little town in Arkansas called Guy, G-U-Y. And apparently everybody around there is getting used to earthquakes in Arkansas. Yeah, this is in California. And there's a man down there named Dirk the Turk. I just noticed that. Dirk the Turk. Yeah. And he's trying to organize people, which is good. People should do this. Since the early fall, there have been thousands of earthquakes there. You heard me right. Thousands of earthquakes. None of them very large, and only a fraction have been felt, but there's not been hardly any damage, but they're happening. But their sheer numbers, and they've been relentless, they create a phenomena that has come to be called the Guy Earthquake Swarm, Guy after the town there. And there's a lot of suspicion about the cause. Actually, I don't even know why it is a suspicion, because what it's all about is what I was talking about earlier. It's this stuff called fracking. And here's what has happened. Oil and gas service companies have injected tens of millions of gallons of diesel fuel into onshore wells in more than a dozen states over the 5 years. And these injections appear to violate the Safe Water Drinking Act. This is according to the EPA. Now, remember, you got to remember, the Republicans want to get rid of the Environmental Protection Agency. And why do they want to do it? Is because the people that they represent, and what Mike was talking about, they don't represent the people. The Republicans don't represent the people at all, not in the teeniest bit. The Democrats represent the people the teeniest bit. So you do have the teeny weeny. that's not enough. But the only reason I ever vote Democratic is to keep the people that don't give up an inch for the common people and are only doing the bidding, carrying the water. For the corporations, our masters, our feudal lords. So they want to get rid of the Environmental Protection Agency so these oil and gas service companies can continue, pardon me, to inject tens of millions of gallons of diesel fuel. So what's happening is that it is poisoning the water tables. The fuel, the diesel fuel, is used by drillers as part of a contentious process known as hydraulic fracturing or fracking. It involves the high-pressure injection of a mixture of water, sand, and chemical additives into rock formations deep underground. This is what T. Boone Pickens is saying. Yeah, we can have all this natural gas here. And he'll make a fortune, and we'll wind up with whole areas that are having earthquakes and having a poisoned water table. Now, I would suggest to you, too. In fact, I first heard about it from one of you here on this show. There's a documentary called Gasland, G-A-S-L-A-N-D. If you happen to have Comcast or any HBO, it's there from time to time. But remember, this is what they want to get rid of. The diesel-laced fluids were used in a total of 19 states. Approximately half the total volume was deployed in Texas, but at least a million gallons of diesel fuel containing fluids is also used in Oklahoma, North Dakota, Louisiana, Wyoming, and Colorado, and also in Michigan, just not that much. All right. Now, also the EPA plans new limits on toxic chemicals in drinking water. And remember that the Republicans want to abolish the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. They don't want the environment to be protected. Are they crazy? Well, yeah, they are. They're absolutely out of their mind, because anybody that does not want the environment to be protected is a lunatic. And what they, and the reason, well, I mean, they might talk about jobs or something like that, but ultimately what they're about, remember, they're the water boys for their corporate masters that are paying their way. Some of them are just completely nuts and are just sort of nihilist, you know, they kind of want to destroy everything in some bizarre way. But I can't even read my own writing. Well, oh, yeah, never mind. I don't need to tell you that. And you get an idea here that there are 123 lawmakers that support polluters over the health of children, according to the Natural Health, let me say it right, Natural Resources Defense Council. And they added up that, let me see, that these polluters, people that have been cited for pollution, that have given over $27 million to 123 U.S. House members. And they're not all Republicans. They're mostly Republicans. But, you know, the Democrats, they want to get in on the swag as well. Part of it is, as well, of course, that you have an electoral system that is so distorted by money, by big money, that an individual congressperson has to get money from somewhere. And if someone's saying, hey, we'll give you $100,000 for your campaign, and remember us when this bill comes up. So, get rid of the EPA? What do you think? All right, I'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this. Want to take a look behind the microphone here at the WRIF studios? Go to WRIF.com and register to win a spot on the VIP list. You'll get information on breaking into the broadcast industry, a tour of WRIF, and can register to win a scholarship to Specs Howard School of Media Arts.
Hey, Sobe Life Water fans, I'm Jessica Zor, best known for my role on TV as Vanessa from Brooklyn. Okay, let me paint you a picture. I'm in the jungles of Costa Rica, and Sobe Life Water is using my body as a canvas for their latest skin suit campaign. Right now, they're painting a lizard suit on me, one scale at a time. You see, the lizard suit mimics the bottle label of the new Sobe Life Water Macintosh Apple Cherry, which, by the way, is delicious and all-natural with vitamins and electrolytes. You can see the skin suit process and get exclusive behind-the-scenes content by visiting facebook.com/Sobe. Sobe Life Water. Introducing Macintosh Apple Cherry and Strawberry Kiwi Lemonade. Two new flavors with vitamins and electrolytes that you've got to try.
Now pick up the two newest zero-calorie Sobe Life Waters, Strawberry Kiwi Lemonade that'll kickstart your taste buds, and Macintosh Apple Cherry that has great flavor. It'll slap your taste buds awake. Both great flavors available at your favorite stores.
Now, this is Joe Cordell. I'm here to talk to you about an unpleasant but an important subject, and that's the subject of divorce. If you're in a good marriage, or even a marriage that's not so good but that can be saved, then you can tune out for the next 60 seconds. Now I want to speak to the guys that are still listening. Odds are you're like a lot of guys. You've worked hard to get ahead, you have a nice home, some savings, a solid retirement plan, and children that you love more than life itself. Yet despite your thoughtful game plan, you're now facing a divorce that you can't avoid. That's where we come in. Cordell & Cordell makes it its business to focus on representing men in your situation.
The attorneys at Cordell & Cordell work to help men maximize their role in their children's lives, which includes protecting men's financial means to do so. Call the domestic litigation firm of Cordell & Cordell, a partner men can count on. Offices in Troy and Detroit, 313-465-1999, 313-465-1999. 313-465-1999. Or visit online at CordellCordell.com. That's CordellCordell.com.
This is your Biotech Minute. Biotechnology, a big word for an area of cutting-edge science that is improving the world we live in. In health, biotech provides breakthrough therapies and treatments for devastating diseases like cancer, MS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and HIV/AIDS. Biotechnology is also helping farmers produce more crops from existing acreage, reducing fuel use and greenhouse gas emissions, and it's creating fuels from renewable green energy sources like algae and plant waste. And this is just the beginning. The biotechnology research being done in laboratories today will improve the health and quality of our lives and our world for generations that follow. Biotechnology, helping heal, fuel, and feed the world. A public service message from this station and the Biotechnology Industry Organization.
Now's the time.
Now's the time to make a difference.
Now's the time to do what's right.
To help a family.
Now's the time to volunteer.
To make a commitment.
To make new friends.
To make dreams come true.
To help a child.
Now's the time to help Habitat for Humanity build hope and change lives with a family in your community or around the world.
Now's the time.
Now, more than ever, help build it.
Visit Habitat.org.
As a pizza delivery guy, it's my job to deliver your pizza in 30 minutes or it's free.
Turn left ahead.
If I don't, my boss isn't happy. So I rely on the right guidance to get me where I need to go.
Turn left now.
I feel the same about my taxes. TurboTax has a unique GPS feature that guides me step by step. It automatically double checks along the way, which helps me know it's done right. And get my maximum refund guaranteed.
Try it online now at TurboTax.com. Choose easy. Money back guarantee details at TurboTax.com.
And now here's another tax tip from TurboTax. First-time home buyers get a lot of credit this year, up to $8,000 in tax credits, that is. But remember, this credit only applies to home purchases made before April 30th. Of course, if you didn't buy a new home, you can still deduct your property taxes, mortgage interest, and even home equity loan interest. For a complete list of deductions and credits, and to find out more about how TurboTax can help you get the maximum refund you deserve, visit us online at TurboTax.com.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome to our second hour. Jolene Jordan off tonight, and next week I'll be off, so Jolene will be doing it all by herself. If you'd like to phone in, 313-298-WRIF, my website, I knew I could think of what they called it, is Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E.com, and if you go to it, you can find out who we're going to have as guests at 1 a.m., except I'll tell you. Professor Stephen Zunis, who knows everything about the Middle East, is going to be talking about Egypt, and Randall Ray, who's a professor of economics, who is going to tell us everything about the economic crisis that, I forgot, it's over, isn't it? Because just stock market's over 12,000, a few little problems about unemployment and all that. But a couple of good interviews that I recorded earlier in the week. And what else? Oh, yeah, Facebook Friends Wanted. We'll have a podcast of this available. And you go to my website and hook on, or go to WRIF.com, and you can get you can sign up for the podcast, and it's free and get it and everything like that. Anyway, I was asking, no one's really spoken to this at 313-298-WRIF, about the celebration about Reagan and just how seemingly inappropriate it is to have this sort of deification of a human being who really kind of screwed up everything, and then he's projected by almost everybody, including Obama, as somebody who had a really great presidency. You know what things were like in 1981, 1982? 10% unemployment. The righties are going crazy because there's 9% now. He came into office having cut some deal with the Iranians. Remember Iran-Contra? He was had one of the more corrupt presidencies in terms of indictments, and had to pardon all these people, and it was terrible. Y'all writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. C-SPAN became unwatchable for me today because of the stupid Reagan celebration programs. As one Twitterer so accurately put it, Reagan is one of the history's greatest monsters, says y'all. Reagan was the worst president in American history and one of the worst leaders in world history. He made George W. Bush possible. Is he one of the, who, let me see, who was the worst? I would say it's a toss-up, at least in the modern era. I'm trying to think. But it's a toss-up between Bush and Reagan as to who was the worst. There are these people that want to put, they want to name something after Reagan in every county in the United States. And at one point, one of the things they want to do, they want to put Reagan's, who shows you, wait a minute, I don't know, let me, do I have anything other than singles in my pocket? Oh, yeah, here's a 20. Who's there? Who is this guy? Jackson. Get rid of this guy. He's on a 20. This guy's an Indian killer, right? Somebody, I can't remember, a $10 bill. They want to put Reagan on a, say, a $10 bill. And there was, and I thought they ought to put Ray Charles. You know who that guy is? Look him up if you don't know who it is. All right, speaking, here's some Bush news, by the way, and I say never forgive, never forget. Protest threats derail Bush speech in Switzerland. A planned trip by former President George W. Bush to Switzerland this week has been canceled in the face of threatened large-scale protests and calls for an investigation into whether his administration committed human rights abuses in the fight against terrorism. Spokesman for Bush said Saturday the trip was canceled after the United Israel Appeal, an international Jewish charity, organized the Geneva event, told him they're canceling the speech because of security concerns. The visit to Geneva was to have been Mr. Bush's first trip to Europe since his memoir, Decision Points, was published, and the first since he publicly stated in interviews on his book tour that he personally authorized the use of waterboarding and the questioning of terrorism detainees. So he confessed to violations of international law. You know, American soldiers in the past have been prosecuted for waterboarding people. So he's committed to a war, he's admitted to a war crime. Yeah, that was dumb. I mean, if you're a criminal, you don't want to confess publicly. As a result, international human rights groups, including Amnesty International, seized on the scheduled visit to petition the Swiss authorities to open an investigation of Bush while he was in the country. The groups argued that he had admitted to torture and thus could be prosecuted in Switzerland and other countries that have signed on to the International Convention Banning Torture. Makes sense to me. And let's see, Whitney Brown, the international director, the senior director for international law and policy for Amnesty International, said, "For a long time at Amnesty, we have been calling for the Obama administration to investigate human rights abuses at Guantanamo, the CIA black sites where they tortured people, like in Egypt, at our behest, and, I don't know, or at Bush's behest. I didn't have anything to do with it. And in Iraq and Afghanistan, it's clear that that's not happening. When we heard that he was traveling to Geneva, we wrote to the national authorities in Switzerland and the local prosecutor in Geneva to ask them to investigate Bush for torture. Amnesty International sent Swiss authorities documents detailing their case for prosecuting Bush for torture based on his admission and other evidence. Swiss officials told human rights groups they had no plans to try to prosecute Bush, but the prospect of large demonstrations at the site of his speech remained, and the event organizers feared the protests could turn violent. Protest organizers were said to have asked demonstrators to carry shoes to the event. Pardon me. Recalling, I got to get some of you guys on here. Recalling how an Iraqi journalist threw a shoe at Mr. Bush in 2008 to protest his visit to Baghdad. Well, all the Bushes aren't bad. I won't even give you all that. Barbara Bush, one of the twin daughters of George W. Bush, endorsed same-sex marriage on Tuesday, publicly breaking ranks with a father who, as president, pushed for a constitutional amendment banning such unions. Ms. Bush, 29, taped a video calling on New York to legalize gay marriage. A bill to do that was defeated. She describes the issue as a matter of conscience and equality. She says in the brief message, "I am Barbara Bush, and I am a New Yorker for marriage equality. New York is about fairness and equality, and everyone should have the right to marry the person they love." The video ends with Ms. Bush, who lives in Manhattan, imploring the state's residents to join us. Barbara Bush is the latest child of a prominent Republican leader to embrace same-sex marriage, long considered anathema to the conservative movement. Gay rights advocates have been quick to seize on the generational split. Meghan McCain, the daughter of John McCain, is an outspoken supporter of same-sex marriage, despite her father's opposition. Mary Cheney, the lesbian daughter of Vice President Dick Cheney, has forcefully backed it as well and is widely credited with helping to persuade her father to do the same. Here's another war criminal. I mean, this guy actually has one good position. Hey, Barack Obama doesn't support gay marriage. Okay. I guess that's it for the Bush update. Let's actually read a couple of emails here. This is from Steven. He writes into Call Tech Talk, yes, pardon me, at yahoo.com. How can we trick Bush into going to a country that will charge him? I don't know, man. But it's work on it, I would say. Let's see. I had I guess that was the last one I'm going to read right now. If you want to write, that's our number, 313-298-WRIF. Jalene handles a lot of this for me, so I'm doing it all. Here is Eric. Eric is in Memphis, Tennessee. Oh, no, Memphis, Michigan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. I had a question about some union things about job descriptions and such. I'm just wondering what a contract's supposed to have in it when it's finalized.
Well, they are supposed to have job descriptions. The only one I really know anything about, even though I've never been, I worked for the UAW, I've never been a member of the auto workers union or been an auto worker, but they have pages and pages and pages of very explicit job descriptions. And sometimes people have ridiculed them, like someone, you know, will spill something and they'll say, gee, can you mop that up? And he says, not my job specs. That's sort of the word. And sometimes it sounds kind of bureaucratic or even foolish. But if you don't have those very discreet job descriptions, you can wind up some a problem as well, and people doing jobs that aren't theirs and whole kind of thing like that. So I don't know. Give me a little more detail. What's up?
Well, we're getting job descriptions, and I'm just wondering, what do I expect? Is it going to change the way I do things at my job, or is it going to make things harder? Is it going to make things better?
Well, unfortunately, we're not in a period of labor ascendancy. So very frequently, although I think sometimes I've said to people, the only thing worse than a union is no union. And I've been a union member for a long, long time, and it's all, I mean, there's been little glitches, but in the main, it certainly served me well, both in terms of salary, in terms of benefits, in terms of retirement when I needed, medical, all of that. And unions have always set the wage standards, job standards, and what have you. Do sometimes do unions, like any big bureaucracy, act horribly and not meet their obligations? Sure. Are we going to actually, you know, there's so few people that are members of unions anymore, that unless the unions really take some strident positions, they could be in the museum pretty soon, you know?
Yeah. So is this, like I say, if we were to get job descriptions and later on they come in and say it's a right to work state in Michigan, and we're sitting there doing the same job as somebody else who's not in the union, and will that affect the way they get paid as the way that we get paid, or would it be affecting to our salary?
I'm not sure exactly on all of that. In work to right, so-called right to work, what the unions call right to get the benefits without paying for it, is that you can't have a union shop where everybody, by a majority vote, even if you vote against the union, you still, as a contract, become a member. It's usually where you have all the right to work states also have the lowest average pay and even the lowest union rate. So a right to work state is a guarantee that people in general, and sometimes workers specifically in an industry, are going to be making less money. But the same union rules would apply to an employee, even if they weren't paying their union dues, they were just along for the ride. But I think you have some questions that are kind of technical, and if you have a decent union, a decent local, they should welcome your participation and your question. So I hope it works out for you. All right, thank you. Appreciate that. Speaking of that, by the way, you can see where this new Governor Snyder is going. He says he's got a study that says the reason that the state's doing so badly here is because the wages for public workers are so high. Michigan public employees' combined wages and benefits far outstripped the private sector in the past decade. He says a key reason state and local governments are on shaky financial ground. Well, you know, how many entities, cities and states are broke? I mean, this is a country whose economic system is broken. And what public employee unions were able to do was to bid up the price of their labor, which includes the benefits and what have you, to a standard that is a decent one. And what guys like this Governor Snyder are going to try to do is they're going to try to break the unions, get them to reduce their pay by as much as they can, maybe even get them to work for a little over minimum wage, no benefits, and what have you. And also, at the same time, destroy one of the financial and staffing components of the Democratic Party. Because remember, whenever you hear a conservative, a right-winger, a Republican talking against unions, one of the things they want to do is use it politically to harm the Democratic Party so they can get their end of the racket in and secure it. And their end of the racket is 100% in the pocket of the corporations. By the way, it turns out that his study isn't true, and one of the state employee union spokesman, Ray Holman, of UAW Local 6000, said the pay analysis was an unfair comparison. As such, the first jobs as a prison psychologist, that's a union member, and a fast food worker in the private sector, who isn't. So it's a matter, of course, of figures don't lie, but liars can figure. You go figure. Because and this is part, Snyder is part of the race to the bottom. I mean, he's going to, when they talk about the economy of Michigan recovering, the same thing of talking about the recovery of the United States. It's a corporate recovery, and that's what things like he's in the pocket in terms of studies and all of this thing called the Mackinac Center. So it's about profits for the corporations. You and I thatch our robes and say, please, sir, can we at least have the minimum wage? All right? Here's Dan in Gross Point. Dan, hi, you're on the air.
Good, how are you?
Good.
I beg to differ with John Reagan. He did have the Reaganomics, was the trickle-down effect. You know, that worked for America for how long?
Not very long.
We thrived off that.
That what?
The Reaganomics trickle-down effect, we all thrived off that. I know I did. Numerous times. I mean, other than that, I mean, come on, like Obama, he's going to end up 10 years from now, he's selling T-bills that he can't, he's living off of T-bills he can't sell.
Well, listen, I think this, for one thing, to say that we support trickle-down economics, which means enrich the already wealthy, which was Reaganomics, and then us peons, us peasants, us commoners will get the beef, we get the grease, we get the drippings, right, that left in the pan. It's not the way I want to really look at an economy, and it doesn't create any stability. They're the guys that began unraveling the regulations of banking and finance that led to this mess that Bush finally presided over, and it's created what we're facing now.
You know what? If I lived off drippings back then, I was happy with drippings.
Okay, that's good. I'm happy with my thatched roof, and I always say yes, sir, when I meet one of my betters. You know, that's a lie, right? I would never do that. All right, let's see. We're getting a call from pretty far away. It's Big John way up in Newberry in the U.P., are you getting us on the internet, John?
Well, yes, sir. How you doing, buddy?
We're good. How's everything up there?
Well, buddy, I'm doing all right, but I'm going to tell you right now, I'm afraid of my job right now. Afraid I'm going to lose my job.
How come?
Well, because, buddy, I don't know if you heard it. I truck basically from here down to Texas, and then I go back and forth. And now they're talking about privatizing, and basically, out of my 8-hour shift, they want us to take a 6-hour break. Now, have you heard about this?
No. You only get 6 hours for a break?
Well, now, I'm going to tell you something right here now. They want to shut us down in our logbooks, which I keep a log, which we all have to, okay?
Right.
Now, I've been doing this 22 years. and I'm scared to death because it's my bread and butter. Now they're talking about privatizing. Now, I want to know what in the hell is happening to America. I want to know when we're going to stand up and going to say, hey, it ain't right, buddy.
Well, we got to do that, Big John, because you see that happening in other countries, not just in the Middle East, like we've seen over the last couple of weeks, but a few times in Europe and what have you, in France and in Ireland and England, when the people there are told that the mess that the rich people made, both through mistakes and through criminal negligence and outright criminal fraud, that we, the common people, are going to pay for it. Well, the common people come out to the public square and say, you are not doing this. Did the same thing even in Iceland, whereas no matter what the hell they do to us, we don't do a thing. I mean, maybe we talk to our neighbors, but here, I'll tell you, one of the things that's happening, and I'm sure it's probably tough in a sparsely populated area like up where you are in the UP, but everywhere in Europe where people have come out against austerity programs and privatization and what have you, as always, it's led by organizations that are already in place, either political parties or unions, or in the case of England, student organizations and what have you. And we don't have that. We've got to, like, reinvent the wheel. We've got to, like, kind of revamp the 60s or something. Or we're just going to, I always talk about thatching our roofs, admitting we're peasants, and I'm only about 10% joking. That's what they've got in mind for us. They want to see how far can they drive us down with us doing absolutely nothing. And they, they throw up all these smoke screens, a whole bunch of people go, Obama, 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 or something like that. It's not even about Obama. It's not even about Bush. It's about the whole nature of how this society is strung together. And if we have a democratic society, Mike from Detroit was saying, remember it's a republic, but we select our people that represent us through a democratic process. Well, that is so distorted by big money. There's nothing that you and I do that really affect the overall major decisions about this country, particularly economically. That's just done behind closed doors, but even politically. I mean, the corporations control the media. They control the government. They control foreign policy. And we have got to launch a resistance movement that first stops all this and then have a movement of renewal that gets a vision of what we want America to be and then fights for it, like people have done a number of times here in American society before. The conservatives, of course, always try to block that, whether it was the American Revolution itself or whatever, slavery, the vote for women, war, anything. They're always on the wrong side of history, and they're the wrong side of history now. But they could take us down. They could take us down. We, the common people, the ordinary people, the middle class, the working class, they could just permanently send us into something so we'd look like Mexico or Guatemala. All right, thank you, Big John. Keep on trucking. So open lines for you, 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here is Scott. Scott's in Farmington Hills. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good.
Hey, I work for you were just talking about Governor Snyder and wanting to abolish the unions and give a pay decrease. I work for a local community college, and we are under a union. I believe it's the ASFAB union.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you could tell me by chance, am I qualified under being a state or government employee?
I sort of missed what you said. Run that through me. Run that by me again.
I work for a community college.
Right.
Talking about how Governor Snyder was wanting to abolish unions and all that.
What capacity do you, what's your job?
I'm actually a low-level custodian.
Okay. And are you in a union?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. It like ask me or something like that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
That's one.
Well, let me tell you, don't low level. That's one of the things they try to get on us. I mean, who would you rather get rid of? Are anybody listening? Who would you rather eliminate in this society? Custodians or financiers? Right? Who's important in this? Financiers screw us all up all the time.
Yeah.
Custodians. Custodians make this society livable. The other guys, the rich big guys, they got an opposite tact. They're enriching themselves. They're But anyway, what was your question? So you're a member of a union, and can they? Well, they would try to get rid of your union, and what they're trying to do, like in Detroit, is they want to privatize those jobs. They want to outsource them so that they will pay a firm that has like contract workers. So rather than you getting a union wage, they would bring somebody in that they're probably paying $8.75 an hour and no benefits.
Yeah,
isn't that nice?
That's horrible. And we're under negotiations right now, so it is kind of scary.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it's been my experience, even with my union that has fairly good people turn out for it fairly decently for the meetings. Sometimes you go to, I mean, I know friends of mine have been like presidents of UAW locals and what have you, and they'll say, they'll have a union meeting and they'll have 8 people there. I mean, this is the time that people really have to go to their local meetings and say, hey, like Big John said, I mean, you imagine that. I mean, don't you think a Big John, a truck driver, do you think he's scared of too much? Think he's scared of, you know?
Not at all.
Not at all. But when I hear a man, a grown man that's worked in a job for 25 years and he says, I'm frightened, that makes me angry.
Because actually, you had answered one of my other questions I had called a few weeks ago about people not going to meetings. And I think I've been an advocate at my college for, you know, getting with the employees and telling them, look, we have to go to these meetings. I talked to this guy on the radio, Peter Warby on the Riff. You know, I did a nice little plug, you know.
Well, I appreciate that.
Not a problem. And actually, there's a couple starting to listen now. But, you know, and I told them that. And I think that our next meeting, I think we're going to have a pretty good turnout. I
mean, well, that's good. That's good.
And I appreciate all your advice, Peter.
Well, thank you, and good luck on all of that, because I've known friends of mine also, union bus drivers. They've just busted their union out, and suddenly, you know, boom, down the drain. Let me just tell you real quickly while you're on the phone, Scott. I was at our neighborhood block club meeting in my suburb, and, you know, like our suburb, like everybody else, is every other one is having problems meeting the budget, our tax revenue is dropping because the value of the houses are dropping. There's not the same state revenue sharing and all that. So our city offices are now open 4 days a week. We haven't laid off any police or fire. Well, it's combined public safety. And they haven't rehired. When people have retired, they haven't hired people into that. And what the city's committed to doing is maintaining those services, and so that there's creative ways to deal with budgetary problems. But ultimately, it's not one little suburb or another. It's the whole manner in which income and wealth is distributed in this country. If you go, I mean, most people, I mean, I always think people must think I'm weird when I say I read the New York Times every day. I do it because, you know, this is part of my job. But you can even go online, nytimes.com, and they have different sections there. And go to the business section, and you start reading about the billions of dollars that these individuals are making off of their investments. So it's essentially money making money. They don't provide anything. They don't create anything. They don't, they don't even, it's not like they're the head of a company, although some of those guys make fortunes as well, and they're after Big John's job. They're after my friend's union job. In fact, they got it. I mean, what kind of people are these that have power over our life? And if we don't do anything, and we can't do it as an individual, I mean, we can think to ourselves, "I'm hip to the game. I'm, you know, they're not fooling me." But as long as we are isolated, atomized, fragmented individuals, we have no power whatsoever. All right, good luck on it all, Scott. That's my lecture about that for right now. Let's see. Here is Dillian in Woodhaven. Hi, you're on the air. Do I have your name right? What?
Hi, Dillian.
What is it?
Dillian Sides.
Okay, go ahead. You're on the air.
That's okay.
Yeah, I was listening talking to you with the truck driver earlier, and I work in a very similar field. I work in the dispatching section, basically, okay. That business. And I also have a weird second job, is I work in film. And both of those areas that everyone's claiming is on the rise right now are just crumbling. It's like, especially with film right now, they're creating this illusion of economic stability in that field, and it's just, it's like the, it's causing more harm than it is good by bringing all this press and media into this, you know, rising film world in Detroit, and it's just all a bunch of bull.
How come? I mean, why do you say that? Most people get the impression, oh, yeah, you know, this is going to be the new Hollywood of America.
It's the new Hollywood of America, all right, and it's going to be just like L.A. in the next 6 years, not in a good way.
Huh.
That's the problem, is you go to L.A. right now, it's I see people on the streets basically laying on cloths of glass.
Yeah.
So you throw them $2 to make them stop, not to entertain you, to get them to stop from cutting themselves.
Wow.
And it's happening just like it did there before, like what's the good example? These studios that are moving in, one of them, particular favorite of mine, it's in Allen Park.
Right, well, let me just interrupt you 1 second. I mean, part of the, I think that's the Governor Snyder is going to be looking about, to end that film, break, or that tax, break for film companies, and they, it'll be gone in a second. I mean, they're just here because we're giving them millions of dollars, right?
Yeah, the tax break is great. You know, if you have a $50,000 budget for a film, but then there's people creating schools that are claiming to be studios.
Okay.
And these schools are taking in people saying, basically, if you complete our course, spend this amount of money, we'll consider hiring you into our business.
Well, that's not good. You mean these ones that are makeup and film schools and what have you?
No, I'm talking about full-on studios.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to move in.
Wow.
Have a school that's attached to their studio. And then it's basically they build the school first, and then they're adding on the studio.
Man.
Yeah, it's just...
Well, and people are desperate. People are getting busted out of good jobs, and they go, okay, I'll take my savings, and I will use that to go to school. Terrible. All right. Thank you. Thank you for that information. Before our break, here's Drew in Dundee. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. We have some open lines. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. How you doing?
Doing good.
I was listening to the program a little bit, and I was feeling some of it here and some of it there, but what's really getting me is you were talking about change and trying to overall better the country, and everyone else is calling in talking about their financial needs, and they're just mostly looking out for themselves, and, which is something that needs to be done at this time, but it needs to be set back to the way it was. The government's interjecting too much with what we're trying to do as individuals with our own personal businesses and our own private lives.
How do you figure that?
I was talking to one of the guys before I actually got on the air, and one of my buddies opens up a bar. He's had it for a couple of years now, and you start getting limitations to what can be put inside the bars. Well, this isn't proper enough to have in a bar. It's got curse words on it. Well, that's not right. Well, you can't smoke inside this bar because the government's going to deem it unhealthy and unfit for someone to have smoking in their own personal business.
Well, it's a state law, and you could argue forever whether that's warranted or not. I'll tell you, I usually don't like laws like that, but I just spent some time at the Ferndale Blues Festival, and the idea that you can stay in a bar without people smoking you out, I don't mind. You know, what we always say is suicide, yes, murder, no. So I hate to say it because I love to go to bars. I love to hear bands, and the idea that there's a smoke-free atmosphere is fine. But, you know, the whole idea, this Reagan-esque idea that government is the problem, is nonsense. I mean, when you take away government, that's when you have the worst situation imaginable. I mean, are laws bureaucratic? Are they enforced arbitrarily? Of course. It's the whole nature of any bureaucratic institution, and that's what government is. But when you go back to periods without laws, not with outlaws, but with that doesn't have laws, like the 19th century, there's no minimum wage. Kids are forced to work in factories. If you try to organize, they call it the National Guard on you. No safety regulations whatsoever. No consideration for time off. No Social Security. No Medicare. Nothing. And that's what that's what the Republicans are all about. 19th century. Let's go back to that. Smoking bars. I mean, that's really not an issue. That's a big one, unless you want to smoke in a bar, of course. All right, Drew. I got to take some. Actually, what I got to do is I got to do these, and I'll be right back. Frank, some others. Hang on. I'll get your call. Open lines, though. And in fact, Mr. Announcer, tell him.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
We know you love to save money. That's why we know you'll love MotorCityDailyDeal.com. Each weekday, MotorCityDailyDeal.com sends an unbelievable deal right to your inbox. We're working with local businesses to make sure these deals save you 50 to 85% off. Restaurants, salons, spas, events, and more. You get incredible deals from great local businesses like these.
The new U Body Wraps and Wellness Center in Utica. Salsarita's in Allen Park. Leo's Bar and Grill. And Novi, and What Up Dog in Dearborn.
And these deals are so good, they're only available for 24 hours. That's right, just 24 hours, then they're gone. MotorCityDailyDeal.com. It's your new local way to save on all the cool things you love to eat, see, and do. Log on, sign up, and save with MotorCityDailyDeal.com. That's MotorCityDailyDeal.com. MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Jolene.
All right, you only got Peter this evening. Jolene off on vacation. I'll be on vacation next week. Let's see. Jerry writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. All presidents have a host of horrible things they have done and a handful of good things. One rarely mentioned admirable thing, Jackson, because I said that, called him an Indian killer, did was fight the privatized money. Jackson's the only president to date to ever paid off the national debt in full. Where was I? Let's see. I just looked up, Jackson Indian killer. And as he's known for having lampshades and bridles made from the skin of Native Americans and known for launching the tragic removals of Indian tribes from the South. If that is not enough to make you think of other sinister fellows we don't see as heroic figures on currency. And then he goes on. Anyway, debalanced the budget and committed genocide. That's nice. I don't think they measure out too well together. At 1 a.m., which is coming up in just a little bit, so this is our final segment, and you can reach me at 313-298-WRIF. I said it at 11 o'clock when we began. I didn't know if my voice was going to hold out. I got one of that, a little bit of that cold that everybody has, and hasn't been bad, but shouldn't talk about a no-hitter, right? Stephen Zunis, professor of politics and chair of the Middle Eastern Studies at the University of California, going to be talking about events in Egypt, and also Randall Ray, Understanding Modern Money. A lot of you out there are all on about money, whether we've got real money or not. And actually, as it turns out, that I didn't really get to the core of talking about money and the Federal Reserve and all that, a little towards the end of the interview. But he's sending me his book called Understanding Modern Money, and I'm going to get him back on the air, and we'll talk about it all. All right, 313-298-WRIF. Here's Frank in Milford. Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
Peter, how you doing tonight?
Doing good. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. I wanted to talk about the unions and the decline of in this country.
Sure.
And I've been a member of the same union now for 12 years, or I was. I worked for an airline, and our employee, our union was recently busted, and it was busted February 1st, and bankruptcy that we went through a couple years ago, and was recently busted again through a merger, and it's concerning because we see people that are retiring, we've seen people that have quit, working at a station, and they're not backfilling these people, or they're backfilling them part time, and these part timers have no benefits. They start at $10 an hour. And how does somebody that's been there 10, 20, 30 years, how do you compete with that?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, for one thing, I want a pilot of the plane I'm going to be on this coming Wednesday to be making $125,000 a year. I don't want a guy making $23,000. And, I'm not criticizing anybody that's stuck doing that. But, the last commercial airline that went down was one of these deals where they had just these people making these low wages and didn't get enough time off and all that, right?
And it's terrible. It's terrible, and we're seeing it in all aspects of the job. You're seeing it at the ticket counter. You're seeing it, the guys handling your baggage. From, your mechanics as well. They're going to subcontractors. They're going to people that are making considerably less, and the bottom line is, the union was just, crumbled recently, and a lot of it had to do with, the good old-fashioned conservative fear machine spewed by the company.
Sure. And that's another thing. They always say Reagan was such a great president. First thing he did, talk about biting the hand that feeds you. The airline pilot union stupidly backed him for president in 1980, gets in there, boom, busts their union, Petco, right?
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good night.
Shoot. All right. Good night. Actually, I wasn't even saying, that what he said, but it doesn't matter. All right. Open lines for you. 313-298-WRIF. Let me get to something that we don't talk about too much, but that's abortion. There's this wonderful organization that provides services for women, and particularly for poor women. It's Planned Parenthood. And the conservatives are really after them. They did one of these things like they did with, why can't I think of the name? Acorn, right? They sent these actors in and tried to entrap an employee into doing something really stupid. And at one place, they were successful in Perth Amboy, New Jersey. Actors working for an anti-abortion group, the manager gave advice on how to get medical care for underage prostitutes. How stupid. And Planned Parenthood, the Planned Parenthood Federation of America, immediately fired the manager and notified prosecutors. Stuart Scheer, vice president for communications of the National Federation, said in an interview that Planned Parenthood had zero tolerance for unethical behavior and that the behavior filmed in video was very isolated. He says, we cannot lose sight of the bigger picture that we have opponents who are in many cases opposed to birth control, honest sex education, and legal abortion, and are coordinating with allies on Capitol Hill to defund Planned Parenthood. Now, you might think about this. You and I are providing Planned Parenthood with federal money up to $75 million a year. And a large number of anti-abortion groups have announced a new campaign called Expose Planned Parenthood that will promote a bill before the House of Representatives that would cut to more than $75 million in federal money that Planned Parenthood affiliates receive each year for family planning. Now, you might think, in general, that you don't like abortion because you have some religious opposition to it or whatever, particularly guys. To me, it's ultimately about women's reproductive rights. And sometimes guys say, hey, I had a little part in this as well. But so they want to, these folks, they want to stop, birth control. But, you get this birth control, and the phrase is in the group's name, Planned Parenthood. So what essentially they're going to create are more children. Well, here's what they're doing. They're either going to have more children or more abortions. But there's a third option as well, and that would be free contraception. In fact, the Obama administration is considering within the new health care law, can it be used to require insurance companies to offer contraceptives and other family planning services to women free of charge? Now, you would think that these people that are opposed to abortion would be the most pro-contraceptive people in the world, that they would make sure, that they would want campaigns for contraception financed, whatever. But, you know, ultimately, you may be thinking, and across the country you got all these Republican men, who lawmakers, who are pushing more and more abortion curbs for women. And I think, what do they always say? There's been 38 million, is that the phrase, or the figure, 38 million abortions since it became legal in Roe v. Wade. So we'd have 38 million more people. Increasingly, the vast majority of people or women who get abortions are poor women. And so there would be, in a situation where we have, in the United States, where we have one of the largest disparities of wealth in the industrialized world, I think the most, that you would have that many poor children. And if you have so many poor people, the highest percentage of poor people of any industrialized country, I mean, you can only be heartless and say, screw all these people, and then you're back to the 19th century again. All right, let's see. Here is Mike and Taylor. Hey, Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
No, you're Mike, I'm Peter.
Oh, sorry, man, what's going on?
Yeah, sometimes I forget my own name, but usually I'm pretty drunk.
Not much. I was just talking about the abortion. Actually, I don't think that's a good thing, man.
Well, as they always say, don't have one.
Yeah, well, actually, I just had one myself, and you know, I'm a young guy, and I don't have a lot of money myself. But you know what? The thought of being a father is well worth the price, you know.
Oh, I think most people think that. Nobody thinks that abortion is a good option, but when you're very poor or you've wound up in a situation where, yeah. I mean, it's one, you know, here, there's not a person on the planet that doesn't think that childbirth and babies are the most wonderful thing in the world. That brings a smile to the meanest person, I hope it does, at least imaginable. But what it shouldn't be, and the Supreme Court has held, that it shouldn't be compulsory pregnancy for women. Women ought to have the option. So there's a difference. You know, these people that are anti-abortion call themselves pro-life, which is nonsense. They're anti-abortion, they're compulsory pregnancy. And the people that say that one of the options to women should be the right of abortion, that they're pro-choice. So the most heartening thing is to bring a baby to term. But if you're stuck in an economic situation, or your birth control has failed, or you don't have the money for birth control, that's what I say. Why aren't these conservatives and these Catholics, got to remember, they're both against abortion and they're against birth control. And so, like, the Catholic Bishops' Council does not want the government to require health insurers to provide free contraception. If that was the case, if you had that much more available, there'd be that many less abortions. But hey, congratulations on being a new father, Mike, and thanks for calling. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number, and let's see, here's Jeff and Taylor. Hey, Jeff, go ahead, you're on the air.
I'm here.
And you're on the air, go ahead.
I am concerned about NAFTA, you know.
We should be. It screwed us big time.
I never hear anything about anything in the presidential speeches about any of this. It seems like it's a forgotten subject.
Well,
we brought this NAFTA up, and it was supposed to bring things cheaper to us. We send it overseas. We come back. It's cheaper. It never came back cheaper.
No, it didn't. In fact, we've just lost jobs.
We lost jobs and went to Mexico. It was supposed to come back cheaper. The cars never came back cheaper. Nothing. And it's still there, and they're still doing the same thing, and we do nothing about it. And we sit here and do nothing.
Well, you know what I was sort of saying to someone a little while ago? If you really want to get precise about it, I mean, we'd sort of talk about the American people or everybody who's been screwed by NAFTA, all the workers and hence all the cities in which the workers live and what have you, there has to be some concerted political action against that. should be demonstrations. It should be the unions should be saying, rather than just forking over these millions of dollars of our union dues to the Democrats who, as you correctly say, Jeff, never do a damn thing about it. I mean, it was Clinton who signed it. I mean, it was Republican. It was a Republican bill, and the majority of Democrats in the Senate and the House voted against it. But Clinton, who was, you know, for all practical 30 years ago or 40 years ago, Clinton could have been a liberal Republican. But it doesn't matter who signed it. Now they want to have a free trade agreement with Central America. Or did that already CAFTA? I think that already got in. And they want to have one with South Korea. And so you're right. I mean, that's what I was talking about. We have to create a movement of resistance. And when we say we, who the hell is we? And how do we coalesce? How do we come together? Where are we going to meet? What organization is going to be there for us to support and act through? That's what the main thing is confronting us. Because right now, it is Jeff and Taylor, mad as hell, and has to keep taking it because there's really nothing you can do tomorrow. And we've got to end that. We've got to find some way that all of us, when we realize that we're being made to pay for the mistakes of the people that are benefiting from this crisis, maybe then things will begin to change. But thank you. Ooh, I got to get through these calls kind of quickly, don't I? Because we're close to out of time. Here's Richard in Westland. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's up?
I just had a comment about the abortion subject.
Sure.
You mentioned that they're trying to pass something that would essentially kind of put a slowdown on the abortions for money reasons.
Yeah.
Well, and you also commented saying that likely most of these abortions are for young, poor women.
Right.
And I kind of assume that the taxpayer dollar used to take care of those kids coming from a poor situation would probably outweigh the $75 million that they're using to...
Yeah, I guess I can't really add it up, but I was going to say that if we didn't have legal abortions, for one thing, as I said, there'd be 38 million more people in the United States.
Yeah, that's, I'm guessing, you know, it's not always the case that abortions are for the poor, but I mean,
yeah,
many times it is, and the money put into that seems like it's a bad argument for them to use for anti-abortion.
I know. Well, ultimately, I don't know what it's all about. I mean, it's people that have a different concept of what personhood is. For legally, personhood begins when a baby comes to term and exits the mother's womb and lives on its own. They want to say, well, gee, when it's just this little spermatozoa or whatever, or when that's cool. I mean, they can argue it, but right now it doesn't have force of law. And women have always had abortions. They've been able to self-induce them. Even in primitive societies, women have induced abortions under certain circumstances. All right, thank you, Richard. Here's Roy in Clinton Township. Hi, Roy, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Doing good.
Hey, well, this whole abortion thing, I mean, there's options out there. If you're going to go through the term and all that, put the kid up for adoption.
But that's what I call the breeding sow theory. You know
right.
what I mean?
But, I mean, at the same time, you know, there's couples out there that aren't able to have kids and can't afford to, you know, take care of the kids. And then... your problem solved right there.
Well, you think we could have adopted out 38 million kids?
Well, not 38 million, no. I mean, for instance, I was adopted, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not against that at all. But, you know, you have all these people out on welfare, and, you know, you have people that aren't, that can't have kids. Is out there willing to take care of a child.
I suppose it would be good if you could convince women to do that. And certainly, I mean, in many ways, you know, as they always say about adopted kids, they were chosen. They, I mean, that's a nice status to be in. And if we should have gentle persuasion, I mean, someone came into some place and said, "I want to have an abortion," and he'd say, "You know, there's six couples in our community that are looking for kids. Would you want to do that?" And pose it to them. I mean, it's a decent idea. I don't know if it happens. Maybe it even does happen. I got to get a couple more calls, Roy. Thank you for that. Let's go to Mark in Windsor. Thanks for making our show international. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing good.
Yeah, I just kind of shooting from the hip here a little bit. Basically, my beef is the price of, like, hydro and gas. It's just crazy. I'll just give you a little example. About 6 years ago, this company called Just Energy came to my door, my front door one day, and kind of put a little scare into people saying, you know, the price of gas is going to go through the roof and we can lock you in at a certain price for the next 5 years.
Right.
What happened was they locked me in and it was a little bit higher than what I was normally paying. 5 years was up and the contract was done. And what they did was they renewed me at a crazy price. At first I was paying 11 cents per cubic meter for gas, and then I was paying, I locked it in with these people, 15 cents, which was a little bit more, and then without my permission, after the contract was done, they locked me in at 39 cents.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know how it's run in the States, but it's like, I don't know how Canada can allow these companies to just dictate of how, an outstanding price that we're paying for gas to survive and keep heat in our homes. And it's the same thing with our electricity. And the thing, bottom line is, it's so scary, the prices of just trying to survive. It makes me wonder what it's going to be like for my kid down the road when he gets to be my age. Like, this is just nuts.
Well, I thought Canada really had strong laws against stuff like that. Isn't there any place you can complain, a consumer's complaint deal or something?
Yeah, the funny thing of it is I complained to the Ontario Energy Board. I managed to get out of this contract that I didn't agree to extend it. And the funny thing of it was, all of a sudden, that was for gas. The funny thing was, all of a sudden, after I got out of that company, my hydro bill came in, and it said that I was locked in with that company for my hydro. And there's no way in hell after what I went through being with them with gas that I would have hooked up with them hydro. Like, how can these companies do this? And
well, there are so many scams out there. It's just amazing. I mean, look at Wall Street. That's the biggest scam of all. Well, I get a lot of solicitations for that. Never occurred to me. I mean, people think, wow, maybe I can save a little money here, and it doesn't turn out to be what we thought. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Mark, and thanks for being our last caller. I appreciate it, and good luck. I hope it works out for you. If it gets resolved, call us back. Well, thank you very much for listening. I made it through, cold and all. Didn't only coughed a little. Didn't have Jalene Jordan here with me. She'll be back next week, and I'll be gone. So I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. And stay tuned. Have a couple of interesting interviews for you right after this.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
We know you love to save money. That's why we know you'll love MotorCityDailyDeal.com. Each weekday, MotorCityDailyDeal.com sends an unbelievable deal right to your inbox. We're working with local businesses to make sure these deals save you 50 to 85% off. Restaurants, salons, spas, events, and more. You get incredible deals from great local businesses like these.
The new U Body Wraps and Wellness Center in Utica. Salsarita's in Allen Park. Leo's Bar and Grill in Novi, and What Up Dog in Dearborn.
And these deals are so good, they're only available for 24 hours. That's right, just 24 hours, then they're gone. MotorCityDailyDeal.com. It's your new local way to save on all the cool things you love to eat, see, and do. Log on, sign up, and save with MotorCityDailyDeal.com. That's MotorCityDailyDeal.com. MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. This is Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, and I'm recording an interview with a special guest who has great knowledge about the Middle East and Egypt in particular. And as we do this, there's hundreds of thousands of people in Liberation Square in downtown Cairo. The violence of the last two nights appears to be over, but we want to get an idea of what this all means, what this means to Egypt particularly. But also, what does it mean to the United States? What does it mean to the world? Joining me is Dr. Stephen Zunis. He's a professor of politics and chairman of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. He chairs the Academic Advisory Committee for the International Center on Nonviolent Conflict, and he's author of Tinderbox, U.S. Middle East Policy and the Roots of Terrorism. And I interviewed him about that a while ago. He joins us from his office in San Francisco. Stephen Zunis, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Great to be on again.
Well, you're probably watching on either Al Jazeera or some of the other live feeds. Is this exciting you, what's happening in Cairo? It sure is me.
Very much so. I think what we're seeing is yet another chapter in this remarkable story we've seen for the past 20, 30 years from the Philippines to Serbia, from Chile to Poland. You know, people who can't work for change within the system, who know armed struggle would be a disaster, instead using massive nonviolent action, placing their bodies in front of the tanks and braving the truncheon and tear gas and bullets for their freedom. Really an inspiring story.
Well, so much has been said, and you're a keen observer of events in the Middle East. And, I can't remember the last time there was such broad commentary about one subject. Why is it that Egypt seems to be such a linchpin for so much?
Well, it's the most important country in the Arab world, which, of course, has been the real center for U.S. Policy for many years. We're talking 82 million people, which is, you know, more than 10 times the number of people in Israel and Palestine combined. We're looking at a country that's next to Israel, is by far the largest recipient of U.S. foreign military aid. It's where, you know, two continents come together. It's the center of Arab popular culture, of Arab media, of Arab scholarship. So what happens in Egypt has a lot of impact in a lot of places.
There's a lot of fear, too, among governments in the Middle East, perhaps all over the world. Tajikistan, for instance, in Asia, and Kazakhstan, countries pretty far away, that suddenly this could inspire people in totalitarian countries that, yeah, there is something that they can do.
Definitely. If I was a dictator, I'd be pretty nervous right now. Indeed, 2011 could be for the Middle East what 1989 was to Eastern Europe. And it illustrates something that I and other people have been arguing for years, that for democracy to come to the Middle East, it cannot come through foreign intervention. It cannot come from sanctimonious statements out of Washington. It has to come from the people themselves.
Well, one of the things that we've seen, even with those two nights of horrific violence, in many ways, that violence pales between the violence that the Iranian government unleashed on its people when it tried a similar set of actions to bring about democracy after the, you know, fake elections.
Actually, the death toll from the Egyptian protests, you know, counting the previous week, is actually higher than
right?
The death toll in Iran. And indeed, the violence of the past few days with the Mubarak thugs coming in remind me very much of the Siji, you know, the dreaded Ahmadinejad's dreaded thugs when they came in. Remind me also a bit of Mugabe down in Zimbabwe and his goons. You know, the people in Egypt seem to be continuing their protests. The army, it appears, is not willing to fire on the crowds. I think both because the rank and file soldiers would not likely obey orders if they were told to, But also it appears that President Obama made it very clear to the Egyptian that if he did use U.S. weapons in a Tiananmen Square-style massacre or a similar severe repression, they can forget about the $1.5 billion of aid and every year and other military assistance from the United States.
Mm-hmm. In the first part of the 20th century, the first half of the 20th century, the revolutions, the attempted revolutions, were about bringing about socialism and communism. Most of them turned out pretty bad and very undemocratic. Now these, most of the revolutions of the late 20th century and into the 21st century have been about simply about establishing the kind of democracy that we supposedly have here in the United States. Is this something that's going to be able, first let me ask you if you agree with what I just said, and secondly, whether you think this is actually going to occur in Egypt?
Well, I think this is, we're definitely seeing a decline of liberal democratic revolutions that have been going on across the world. I see the people. I mean, I definitely see Egypt going in this direction if the protests are successful. Basically, because the people who are leading this revolution tend to be young secular activists, groups in places like Kafaya, the April 6th movement. These are moderately left youthful organizations who believe that, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood and their aging leadership are as out of touch with their day-to-day realities as the regime. Though most of them are presumably practicing Muslims, they do not want to install any kind of a theocracy or anything like that. Despite some scare tactics, this is going to be like Iran in 1979 when the U.S.-backed dictator was overthrown and a very repressive Islamic Republic was established in its place. You know, the civil society in Egypt is far stronger than it was in Iran in 1979. You don't have this strong clerical hierarchy in Egypt, a Sunni country, like you did in Shiite Iran. The bazaaris and merchants, you know, they're not tied to the clerical establishment. Indeed, they're largely dependent on tourist industry, so they would want to go in a more moderate, liberal, democratic direction, presumably. So yeah, I don't think there's any question that while an independent while a democratic Egypt may take a more independent line from the United States than the current dictatorship, though they might not be as willing to abide by the dictates of the International Monetary Fund and other international financial institutions. They'll definitely be a nationalistic, moderately left-leaning perspective. It will definitely be a liberal democratic regime, and as I try to tell people in this country, that even though a democratic Egypt may not agree with the United States quite as much as the current regime on a number of political and economic issues, in the long term, it's the best thing possible for America's national security, because when you have people that can work for change through the system nonviolently, when their grievances can be addressed through the political process, they are far less likely to be prone to support extremist ideologies and terrorism.
My guest is Dr. Stephen Zunis. He's professor of politics and chair of the Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. And I want to remind people again, we are recording this in the 2 o'clock hour on Friday, and you're listening to this on Sunday. And there's good reason for me reminding you of this. Tell me if you think I'm correct. The situation is so fluid, we could, in 2 days, we could, looking back and say, whoa, that's not what happened. Do you think we're safe?
Well, things are rapidly changing, but I mean, I think some of the protesters' hopes of a quick and easy victory are not happening. It's going to be a more protracted struggle. And even if Mubarak leaves shortly, or has left by the time this show is broadcast, the talk at this point is that it will be handed over to these generals, Suleiman, the dreaded head of the military intelligence, and like-minded military officers. But, you know, the people out in Tahrir Square and and in Alexandria and Port Said and Ismailia and all these other Egyptian cities, by the, literally by the millions, they're not talking about having a kinder, gentler dictatorship. They are talking about democracy. They're talking about freedom. And this is really, really critical.
Well, some people have said that Suleiman will be, you know, the torturer in chief will become the president. That may not bode well.
Not at all. This is a generation that's grown up knowing authoritarianism, knowing corruption, knowing a worsening economy. They want a government that is accountable. They want a government where there are free elections. They want a government where they can organize peacefully without fear of repression. They want a free press. They want independent political parties where their votes count. And I don't think this is the kind of thing that someone like Suleiman could bring, and certainly not based on his record.
Stephen Zunis, also people have put forth the idea that the fix is in, essentially, and I somehow can't imagine Barack Obama acting quite like this, although my voice with a little bit of a cold probably can do it, almost like the Godfather is calling him up and said, hey, you're out of here. And because he is no longer a U.S. asset, he is a U.S. liability. And they, and in fact, if you've seen the news reports, that there's been conversations between the Egyptian government and the U.S. government, how to create a peaceful transition, which I would assume mean how do we, or how does the United States government and foreign policy ease somebody in who is going to maybe stop torturing people, although I don't know where we're going to send our renditioned prisoners now to get tortured, but that will carry out U.S. foreign policy in that area as an asset, but not be quite as awful as the Mubarak regime has been for so long.
Well, you know, for decades, the United States has propped up the Mubarak dictatorship, $1.7 billion annually. The Democratic-controlled Congress, with Obama's signature, passed the most recent installment only 6 weeks ago. And it's interesting how U.S. policy has evolved during the first week of the demonstrations. You had Clinton and Biden praising the relationship with Egypt, and at most they are willing to call for certain unspecified reforms, you know. But the people on the streets weren't demanding reforms within the regime; they were demanding a democracy. It wasn't until Sunday, last Sunday, that Obama and Clinton finally started using the word democracy and started using the word transition. And then when Mubarak said, oh, he wouldn't seek re-election, which was at that point a foregone conclusion, but was going to stay on until September, the Obama administration started talking about a transition soon. They're starting the transition now. In fact, they did stress now. And Mubarak's refusal, I'm sure, is frustrating. But I think it illustrates something important, that despite the fatalism that you have in the Arab world that I picked up during my time there, that the sense that they're powerless, the people are too apathetic to make change, that the they'll always be stuck with these dictators imposed by Western countries, that Washington will always impact what happens on the Arab street. Instead, we see the Arab street impacting about what's going on in Washington, that Washington is playing catch-up. Washington is belatedly realizing they don't want to be on the wrong side of history yet again. And so, you know, belatedly and tepidly, in my view, the Obama administration is coming around to the realization that, indeed, Mubarak is a liability. And despite, you know, pressures from certain right-wing members of Congress and pundits and the like that are saying, oh, no, this is our ally, you shouldn't have any business meddling. Well, you know, if given that $50 billion of our tax money has gone to prop up this dictator, I think we have every right to tell him he should step down.
Yeah.
At this point.
But,
and
so,
be willing to cut off that aid if that's what it takes.
Well, maybe extend the answer a little more, because what I was interested in, maybe use an analogy. Well, there's an analogy that says they're switching deck chairs on the Titanic, and this is the ship.
Yeah.
The ship is.
Yeah, and this is my big fear. Actually, I don't have any question that LeBarc is going to be out within a couple of weeks. That he's not going to last until September, and what is going to replace him? And my fear is that the Obama administration is going to settle for another dictator, in effect. They'll put their faith that Suleiman will be a reformer and open things up. I could see, from what I know about him, he might be willing to crack down on corruption in some quarters. He might be willing to open things up a little bit. But this guy is a military man. The military has run Egypt since the revolution in 1952. I see no indication that he's going to want to change that. He's been jockeying for power for some time, and I'm afraid that what we're going to see is Washington shifting to support yet another general. Remember, Mubarak was a military man. He was head of the Air Force before Sadat perhaps had been his vice president. I mean, so just because these guys tend to prefer business suits doesn't mean that we're not talking about a military dictatorship here already. So I'm really, really concerned that the Obama administration is not going to follow through, that once Mubarak is gone, they're going to expect the people to be satisfied with another military strongman. But based on what I know of what's happening on the streets in Cairo right now, that's not going to satisfy the people of Egypt.
I was just going to bring that up, your knowledge, your direct knowledge of all that. Dr. Stephen Zunis is my guest. He's professor of politics and chair of the Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. And a critical book to look at all of this, Tinderbox, U.S. Middle East Policy and the Roots of Terrorism, gets into much of this. When did Tinderbox come out?
Actually, it came back in early 2003, but I did talk even back then about this problem of how the United States ends up supporting dictatorships, how the anti-Americanism in the region is not, as we were told, because they hate our freedoms, but because our policies in that part of the world have had little to do with freedom. They've been about supporting these dictatorships and these occupation armies. And the people that are demonstrating for their rights in Cairo and other parts of Egypt have been being attacked with tear gas says Made in USA on it.
Yeah.
We're really, this idea that somehow we can advance our interest by supporting these dictators, it may be useful in the short term, but in the long term, it always comes back to haunt us. And it's really time, it's really, really overdue that we end this. And it's been very hard. I mean, there's a bipartisan effort just to have a simple congressional resolution that called for more freedom and democracy in Egypt. And you had Dianne Feinstein and other senators block it.
Hmm.
Because, again, the whole idea is that it's somehow in our best interest to support these corrupt dictators. But that just gets people more angry at us. I don't think it's where most Americans are coming from. I mean, your area in Detroit has a huge population of Arab Americans, and many of them had to leave because they were living under authoritarian regimes that where they did not have economic opportunity. They did not have these regimes did not provide the options for a better life, and so they had to immigrate. And it's a shame that people are, if you want to come to America because they want to come to America, that's great, but they shouldn't have to leave the countries of origin and leave their families behind if they have a if they had opportunity, if they had the freedom and democracy that's currently being denied to them back there, back at home.
Well, maybe you could speak just a little, and we're closing in on the end of the show with Dr. Stephen Zunis, about the level of racketization of these dictatorships. Most people experience political repression just as that. They try to speak their mind, and they get clapped in jail or tortured or lose their jobs, whatever. And yet the extent of these governments as kleptocracies, institutionalized theft and looting of the national wealth is astounding. And I wonder if you can just tell
me. I mean, this is, saw this in Indonesia as well. I mean, entrepreneurs are squeezed between, on the one hand, opening up the country to multinational corporations and this foreign investment-driven model of development, where they have a hard time competing, and then on the other hand, they get squeezed by businesses with connections to elite families favored by the government, and so they get it in both directions. So when you have economic liberalization without political liberalization, you create an environment where people get ripped off. And, privatization of public assets, rather than making the economy more efficient, are handed over at bargain basement prices to well-connected families who use them to line their pockets and the pockets of government officials. So, some of the problems affecting the Arab world are structural and have a lot to do with the the neoliberal model of globalization and with the structural adjustment programs imposed on them and a bunch of other things. But when you have a government that's not accountable to the people, and you have a government that is, as you say, a kleptocracy, it makes a bad situation far worse and really creates the kind of crisis atmosphere that's contributed heavily to these recent uprisings.
And also we learned that the army in Egypt owns about a third of all property in Egypt. I mean, it boggles the mind how an army owns like resorts and what have you. But no wonder they support the old order. But when they start saying, yes, change is necessary, and some of them, there was a couple of ministers of the government and ex-ministers that were in Tahrir Square today, Friday, when we're recording this, which means I think they realize that at a minimum they have to be on the wave of change or they're going to get completely swept away.
Very much so. And this is really an important point. I mean, you can have all the formal mechanisms of power. You can have all the guns and military apparatus that you want. You can even have the support of foreign powers. But if enough people say no, if enough people say, we're going to protest even if you ban public demonstrations, we're going to continue protesting at night even if you say there's a curfew, where as soon as people stop obeying orders, stop being afraid, are willing to say no at great personal risk, then the regime no longer has power. And I think the big mistake a lot of people make, particularly in the State Department and in other foreign ministries and governments, is that there's this tendency to underestimate the power of ordinary people to create change. And that's what we're seeing in Egypt right now, and that's why I see it's particularly inspiring.
Inspiring indeed. And just time for a final question. We hear a lot about bipartisanship and how that's almost impossible these days and the kind of enmity between the two parties. Yet, in terms of foreign policy, there is bipartisanism, as you indicated just a little while ago. What can we, and I mean the vast majority of people that don't want our treasury looted to be sent billions and billions of dollars off to other countries for military aid that is used repressively, what in the world can we do?
Well, I actually co-led a workshop in Cairo a couple of years ago on strategic nonviolent action, and many of the people who were there are among the leaders of this demonstration, and I said to them that, while I really believe nonviolent action is the best way to advance freedom and democracy in Egypt, as a person coming from the country which has provided your government with the instruments of repression, I'm the first to acknowledge that the country that needs massive strategic nonviolent action in the cause of freedom and democracy is the United States. So we need to indeed pressure our government in as many ways as we can to stop supporting dictatorships and authoritarianism and oppression around the world.
All you got to do is go to your city council, and your city council is going to be talking about cutting back library hours, laying off police and fire, not repairing roads, and then understand what this money is going out the door. So there's a real incentive there. Dr. Stephen Zunis, as usual, thank you so much for being on the show. If you want to see more of Stephen's stuff, and I would highly recommend it, go to Stephen Zunis, that's Z-U-N-E-S. So it's STEPHENZUNES.org. Tough to get. If you're driving, you can also go to my website, Peter Werbe, but I got to spell that as well, W-E-R-B-E.com. Again, thanks for being on my show.
My pleasure.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
People choose 5-Hour Energy over 7 million times a week for lots of reasons. It's a nutritional supplement that really works. Its key ingredients are available in everyday food like broccoli, bananas, and avocados. It contains about as much caffeine as a cup of the leading premium coffee, zero sugar, and 4 calories. What will be your reason for choosing 5-Hour Energy? Its effectiveness? Its beneficial ingredients? There's only one way to know. Try it today.
Individual results may vary. See 5hourenergy.com for more details.
Does your furnace need repair? Your house need cleaning? Or maybe you're ready to update your kitchen. Big or small, whatever your home improvement need, now it's easy to find the right home pro for your project. Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to top-rated remodelers, maids, handymen, roofers, and many other home contractors. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic has a network of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. If you need a painter, electrician, plumber, or any other home service, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor-recommended contractors in your area. Now, you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
How do you prepare for jobs involving electronics technology, drafting and design, or information technology? Call ITT Technical Institute. Develop knowledge and skills that you could use to pursue many opportunities in promising career fields. At ITT Tech, classes meet just a few days a week, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Call ITT Tech now for more information. 800-741-5123. That's 800-741-5123.
My mom is my hero. She goes into burning buildings. She finds people inside who need to be saved. She helps them get out, even when she can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My mom is a firefighter, but the best thing she can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werbe.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werbe here with you. Well, the recession is over from what we read, right? Wall Street clocked in last week at above 12,000. Big profits for the banks and some of the other financial concerns. Looks like the auto companies are doing okay again. Bonuses being paid by Chrysler and Ford to its workers. Except, gee, there's a little problem of unemployment. But, well, you know, we all regret that. But eventually we're told that will all catch up. Wall Street was held accountable by the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, said that this was not just like the weather, just like happen, that there's a great responsibility for this. Joining me is Professor Randall Wary. He is an economics professor at the University of Missouri in Kansas City, and he's also, and I think this is extraordinarily important, he has a number of books, including Understanding Modern Money, and it would be nice if it was love or community, some emotion like that made the world go round, but those of you who are familiar with the film and the play Cabaret, there's a song in there that says, money makes the world go round. Indeed, it does. Welcome, Professor Randall Wary, to the Peter Werby Show. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Oh, it's Randall Ray. I think the people that put out the press release got the spelling wrong.
Well,
anyway,
okay, that's...
W-R-A-Y.
Okay, we'll show you. This is the kind of radio we do. We don't even edit. We'll just go at it. Professor Randall Ray, welcome to the Peter Werby Show. Thanks for joining me. Everything else is as I said. Well, there was just the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, and its report said Wall Street, the Fed, Congress, the past presidencies all bore some responsibility. Were you happy with what it said, the majority report at least?
Yeah, as far as it went, I don't think it told us much that we didn't already know, but it's nice to see that they are confirming that really everyone should have seen the crisis coming, that everyone had a hand in creating the crisis, and now it is time to start prosecuting the fraudsters.
Whoa, prosecuting. Well, we don't usually talk about that. We just say, let's move on. The damage was done. We've corrected it all. Few million people unemployed, housing prices still dropping, 11% of our homes are empty in America, but why the call for actual prosecutions on your part, Professor Ray?
Well, because I think there was a just massive, unprecedented fraud, I think the biggest scandal in human history, and you see that the problem is that we have left those fraudsters in control of Wall Street, our banks, our financial system, and even to a large extent our government, because a lot of those people are in the Obama administration. And you mentioned that the banks are reporting that their profits are up and they're paying their CEOs big bonuses and all of that. Now, in other words, they are continuing to do what they've been doing for the past decade. They're cooking the books. They are actually massively insolvent, but they want to pay bonuses to each other, and so they're just manufacturing the profits. They're not real.
I want you to, if you would, maybe amplify on your statement that we are in the midst of the worst scandal in human history. Is this hyperbole, or can that be justified, that statement?
No, I think it can be justified. Every single link in the food finance chain is fraudulent, from the mortgage brokers who committed lender fraud to the securitizers. These are the investment banks that package together a whole bundle of mortgages and issued securities against them. They engaged in securities fraud. The credit ratings agencies certified this trash AAA. The property appraisers overvalued real estate. And now the mortgage servicers, which are those same banks that securitized the mortgages, are literally stealing people's homes. Millions and millions of homes are being illegally taken. It's a scandal. There's just nothing that compares with this.
Well, as you know, there is a difference between malfeasance and misfeasance. One, you're just stupid or made a mistake. The other, that there's actual malintent, criminal intent. And you would allege the latter, that it actually rises to the level of criminal intent?
Yeah, I think that it does. Now, you're right. This has got to be proven in court. The problem is that Washington is not even pursuing what looks to be criminal actions. So we won't know exactly how much criminality there was, but all the evidence points to a great deal. Let me just say that a lot of your listeners probably will remember the savings and loan crisis in the 1980s. By the end of the 1980s, 1,000 top management of savings and loans were convicted and sent to prison. Actually went to prison, 1,000 individuals. This crisis is orders of magnitude bigger. I think the criminality is much, much worse than it was in the 80s. So, yes, it has to be proven in court, and I think that it will be proven in court if Washington will start to prosecute the fraudsters.
I think you know, at least I think I know, that that's not going to happen. These are the pillars of the economic and financial sectors of the United States, men mostly, men and women, that are still, as you indicate, Professor Ray, at the levers of power and decision-making. And they're also interwoven into every administration and to both political parties. So is this the way to go? I mean, if someone said to you, Randall Ray, what direction should we go in? And you would, say, advocate prosecution over, say, greater reform, greater regulation, or both, or all three, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think we need a whole bunch of things. We do need reform. We do need re-regulation. We do need a foreclosure holiday. We've got to stop the foreclosures, because I think it's probable that most of the foreclosures are illegal. And even if they weren't, the foreclosures are very bad public policy, because they continue to throw people out on the streets and throw more houses into the market, which is already completely glutted with too many homes for sale. So that depresses the home prices in your neighborhood, which puts more people underwater, which increases the incentive to walk away from your mortgage, and so on. So I think all of those things need to be done. But look, this is supposed to be a nation of laws, and that anyone who commits a crime should be prosecuted. I agree with you that it is difficult to prosecute the head of Citibank and Goldman Sachs. Politically, it is difficult. During the saving and loan crisis, of course, we did go after Charles Keating, who was extremely well-connected. He essentially bought and paid for five senators, including John McCain. But he was prosecuted. He did go to prison. So there's a precedent for it. Now, so far, Washington isn't doing much, but attorneys general around the United States of the 50 states, they are beginning to go after the criminals. And I think that will increase the pressure on Washington to also start doing something. So I have some hope, but I do admit that it is going to be difficult.
Randall Ray is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He is a professor of economics at the University of Missouri. We're talking about the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission and its report that said that there is great responsibility, culpability for what we face. And the we here, and I always think it's important to be accurate about pronouns, is that the average American person, because the people that that are blamed for the financial crisis, they're doing okay. So, Randall Ray, when someone's listening, they're this isolated individual, they're not part of a political movement like we've seen to end foreclosure, say, in American history in the 30s, say, and we can't count on the political parties to do anything. There's nothing. We're really disempowered considerably.
It's tough. Now, some homeowners are starting to fight back individually. In foreclosure cases, they're getting lawyers who are successfully fighting against the foreclosures. The judges are starting to wake up to the fact that the banks that are trying to foreclose actually do not have legal standing to take property away from people. So homeowners are winning in court with judges throwing the foreclosure cases out and handing clear title to the homeowners, saying, yeah, the bank has no right to foreclose. Here is the title to your property. No one can take your home away from you. So that is being done. Class action suits are also being started. So here we've got groups of homeowners banding together with a lawyer taking the case to court. So people are starting to do something about this. Probably a lot of your listeners saw Michael Moore's last movie, Capitalism, Love Story, and saw Representative Kaptur from Ohio saying, stay in your homes. Demand that the banks actually produce the documents that prove that they have the legal standing to your property. Because in almost all cases, they actually do not have it. They destroyed it. They destroyed the paperwork chain that is required to foreclose on property. So if people will stay in their homes and if they have the wherewithal to fight the cases, they probably will be able to win.
That's amazing. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to, you mentioned some of this a little earlier in our conversation, but here printed is one of your statements, and I'd like to read it again and then ask a question. And you're talking about the fraudulent home foreclosures you just mentioned. And you said this could not have happened without the acquiescence and support of real estate agents, property appraisers, mortgage brokers, lenders, investment banks, credit ratings agencies, trustees, accountants, credit default swap sellers and mortgage insurers, mortgage sellers, and even judges who let fraudulent banks steal home. Don't we have an economic system that is way too complex and is really set up not to facilitate people like you and me and the listeners here for easy access to doing what we'd like to do, that is earn an income and buy things that make our life good, but rather it's almost set up to allow people to game the system?
Yeah, the creation of this whole system of home finance goes back about 30 years. It took a long time to develop this extremely complex method of providing mortgages. And gradually over time, it got so many different entities with their hand in the pie, each one of these trying to get their own share, mostly of fees, that it became complex, it became easy to game in order to increase the earnings of the various entities. So, you know, we ended up, just go back to 2004, 2005. What were these loans called? Liar's loans. They were called ninjas. No income, no job, no assets.
I never heard that. No problem.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, these were advertised by the banks. If a bank advertises, hey, we make liar's loans, what are they telling you? Yeah. They're telling you they are engaged in fraud. They are going to make a loan that they know the home buyer cannot possibly pay. It's a liar's loan. Well, they don't have the income or assets to make the payments. The banks invented these things, not the borrowers.
Well, I want to talk about that, about who's, you know, some people say there's other responsibility, but people that call the financial sector people and the bankers, banksters, I mean, which implies their criminality and all this. But if you have a system that is so easy to game, we know when community does not rule our interactions. I mean, normally, you know, people within families don't cheat one another. Friends normally don't cheat one another. People even in neighborhood normally don't cheat everyone. But we've seen when this economic system does not have regulations, people will do the most horrible things. They'll work people 14 hours a day. They'll have 8-year-old kids in mines and textile factories. They'll have no safety equipment, no days off, and the whole lot of it. I mean, we've had to fight for all that and encode some of it into law. So without removing the individual culpability of people responsible for this current financial crisis. This is a system that seems to me, contrary to what some say, to be vastly underregulated. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it was underregulated, and also the incentives were all wrong. We moved to a system that's called originate to distribute, where the banks originated the mortgages, but they would not hold them. And what that meant was they had no interest in ensuring that the home buyer actually would be able to make the mortgage payments. It just didn't matter to them, because as soon as they made the mortgage, they would package a bunch of these together and then sell them on to investors. Often these were pension funds. So the pension fund would hold a security that entitled them to the mortgage payments. The bank that actually made the mortgage loan could care less whether the home buyer ever could make the payments on the loan. They earned their income based on the fees for originating the mortgages, and they got a better fee for making the worst kinds of mortgages. The riskiest ones gave the best fees. And if you look at, you know, that list of all the people involved in this system of lending, almost everyone involved was rewarded based on the volume, the number of mortgages they made, not on the quality of the mortgages. So they had a huge incentive just to make lots and lots of mortgages. It didn't matter whether the people would be able to service the mortgages. In fact, it was better if they couldn't.
Hmm.
It's very, very strange. But that is the sort of system that was set up.
Professor Randall Ray is my guest. He's a professor of economics at the University of Missouri in Kansas City. You're listening to the Peter Werbe Show. I said earlier, the people that created the crisis, according to the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission that made its report last week, the people that, and the layer of people, not even in some cases the same individuals, they are the ones who created the situation the ordinary person in the society is paying the cost for it. But what do you make of the argument that said, and unfortunately I tend to accept it, that these financial concerns were too big to let fail? I mean, many people said, I don't want my tax money going to these people, and probably that's even reinforced by the sense now that the, you know, I'm unemployed, they're giving themselves million-dollar bonuses. Did we have to bail out these big financial concerns?
Well, absolutely not. First, the law in the United States is that an insolvent financial institution must be resolved. That is, there's a variety of ways that you close down a financial institution. You might close it down and sell the whole thing to another. That's usually a bad idea when you've got a big financial institution, because you just create an even bigger one. Another way of resolving it is you divide it up and sell off little pieces. And then finally, if it's really, really insolvent, the FDIC takes over and sells the assets for whatever it can get, and it covers the losses, makes the deposits good. But anyway, that is the law. You must close down insolvent financial institutions. We chose to ignore the law. The second reason why you want to close them down is because they have proven that they are operating against the public interest. The kinds of activities they're engaged in, even if they're not outright criminal, they created this crisis. And if you leave them open, they will continue with the same practices that created the crisis. And in fact, that is what they're doing. I would say the third flaw in that argument is this belief that these biggest institutions are important for making loans to small business and to households, and we need that in order to get the economy going again. That's been the claim from the very beginning, that if we don't bail out these top six institutions, we'll never get the economy going again. Well, look, we bailed them out. Is the economy going again? No, it is not. Are we creating jobs? No, we are not. Are those institutions making loans? No, they are not. the profits that they're reporting are all due to trading activities, trading assets, mainly trashy stuff, to each other. They are not making loans. We are not recovering. We are not creating jobs. So the whole argument is just flawed from the very beginning.
But what about the bailout of the auto industry? Of course, that was near and dear to people right here in the Detroit area. Would you say the same thing? We should have let them sink?
No, I would not. See, let's compare and contrast the two bailouts. So we had a bailout of the auto industry. There was a public discussion. Congress debated about this. Is it a good idea or a bad idea? In the end, they decided it was in the nation's interest to bail out the auto industries. It was all transparent. We knew exactly how much money was going to be allocated to bailing them out. And whether or not it was a good idea, it seems to have worked. The auto industry is doing a bit better. It does seem to be on the road to recovery. Contrast that with what we did to the banks. The bailout of the banks was almost entirely done in secret, mostly by the Fed behind closed doors. When Congress asked Geithner, who now is Treasury, the head of the Treasury, but he had been the head of the New York Fed and heavily involved in the bailout, and Bernanke, who, of course, was the head of the Fed, what they had done. They said, we want to see what promises you made. Which banks did you choose to bail out? How did you bail them out? They just simply refused to provide any information. There was no transparency. There was no debate. Should we have bailed out Goldman Sachs? It was never discussed. And just by the way, the estimates are that the total amount that was either lent to the banking sector that was used to buy bad assets from banks or that was guaranteed in case anything goes bad, Uncle Sam is on the hook. The estimate is that that was $20 to $25 trillion worth of bailout given to the financial sector. Compare that with the $800 billion stimulus package that Obama got through. It's many, many times bigger, and there was no public discussion of whether it's a good idea.
You know, we're almost out of time in here, and this may be a whole can of worms, but you mentioned the Fed, the Federal Reserve, and you got a lot of people saying, you know, abolish the Fed. I'm bringing that up because I'm sure that there's some listeners that say, yeah, if we abolish the Federal Reserve System, all our problems would be solved. Any quick answer to that? I don't know if there is.
Well, no, I wouldn't abolish it, but I would constrain it and bring it out into the open. The Fed is a creature of Congress. Congress created the Fed in an act in 1913. They've modified the act from time to time, but they have let the Fed get away with operating behind closed doors in secret, and often, I think, operating against the interest of the country. I think we need to bring them under direct control of Congress. Now, why do we need the Fed? The Fed does two main things. One is it sets the overnight interest rate. It's called the Fed funds rate, and that is the way that it implements monetary policy. I'd like to see that brought under Democratic control, but the second thing it does when you're in a financial crisis, it acts as a lender of last resort to the banks. It lends reserves in order to stop bank runs. Before we had the Fed, we would have a bank run, the bank would fail, depositors would lose their deposits. We don't want that to happen. We do need a central bank to lend in a crisis. But the Fed has expanded its role, as I was just talking about, to taking it upon itself to prop up insolvent financial institutions. That was never part of the Fed's mandate, and we should stop that sort of behavior in which it picks winners and losers. It decides it really likes Goldman Sachs. It will never let Goldman Sachs go under, and so through the back door it bails it out. That should not be permitted.
Well, we need, as we said, this system heavily regulated. The calls to deregulate would just bring us more of the same. Professor Randall Ray, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time with us today. Professor Ray is a professor of economics at the University of Missouri. He is the author of Understanding Modern Money, and you've helped us understand what we're facing right now. And I thank you for that very much, and thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Is it time for a new roof? If the roof on your house is old, weathered, or in need of help, you can save $500 if you call Sears Roofing right now. Call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. Call right now and you can save $500. Sears licensed, fully insured contractors can get your roofing job done right. Just call 1-877-938-1414. Sears has a variety of shingles and styles that are built for long-lasting performance. And you'll save $500 if you call now. So call 1-877-938-1414. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. So call Sears Roofing and save $500. Call 1-877-938-1414. That's 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
If you think of yourself as a technical person and want to pursue a career in technology, get started by calling ITT Technical Institute. At ITT Tech, you can develop knowledge and skills to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. Fields like electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design. Call 800-741-5123. Thousands of graduates have launched new careers after attending the ITT Techs nationwide. Classes and day or evening courses meet at convenient times and teach skills used in the workplace. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career services are available for graduates. Make a technology degree program part of who you are. Call ITT Technical Institute for more information. Call right now. 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's ITT Tech. 800-741-5123.
Back to the Rock.
Your mommy told us you like to listen to music
on 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Do you have the time to listen to me whine about nothing and everything all at once? I am one of those melodramatic fools, neurotic to the bone, no doubt about it. Sometimes I give myself the creeps. Sometimes my mind plays tricks on me. It all keeps adding up. I think I'm cracking up. Am I just paranoid? Am I just stuck? I went to a shrink to analyze my dreams. Like a sex that's bringing me down. I went to a whore. He said my mind's a bore. So quit my wife and cause it's bringing me down. Sometimes I give myself.
you're the D-bag who keeps asking, cold enough for you? You know what? It really is. Thanks.
Your WRIF man card is being revoked. We are Detroit. We are 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.